Today's sponsor is Shudder, the premium streaming video service devoted to horror, thrillers, and suspense. Backed by AMC Networks, Shudder has a growing and dynamic selection of thrilling premieres, originals, and exclusives, and is the only place you can see Ken Russell's legendary The Devils.
New this week is Shudder's latest exclusive, the meta slasher, Lake Bottom. A hit at South by Southwest, Lake Bottom is inspired by the true story of four teenagers stabbed to death while camping. 40 years later, a group of teenagers arrive at the same campsite, hoping to solve the infamous murders by reconstructing it minute by minute. Declared a superior slasher movie by The Hollywood Reporter, Lake Bottom is a horror film you do not want to miss. See it today, only on Shudder.
Shudder is available on the web, iOS, Android, Chromecast, Apple TV, and Roku for $4.99 a month or $49.99 for an annual membership. But Shockwaves listeners can get a free month by entering the promo code SHOCK at checkout. So go to Shudder.com today and find the best collection of horror available to stream anywhere. Okay, and welcome to episode number 52 of Shockwaves. I'm one of your hosts, Rob Galuzzo, joining me today with a Corona in his hand.
And Bergman money in his
And Bergman money in his pocket, courtesy of Pony Smasher, a.k.a. David Sandberg, the director of Lights Out, who gave you Bergman money in exchange for a Shockwaves t-shirt.
A man who fulfills his promises.
He does. This is Elric Kane we're talking about,
me.
Of course.
And I got the beer today.
Because he gets that long an intro.
I'll take it all.
And who asked you for that beer? Our third host, Mr. Ryan Turek.
FYI.
Damn right.
FYI. Get FYI beer Turek. On the way here.
FYI, I forgot to bring the beer. FYI, you should go get it.
Yeah. My least favorite FYI.
And right now, as you listen to this, if you are in the Arizona area, head over to Arizona Comic Con, because that is where Becca McKendry is right now.
Yep.
She's repping Blumhouse.com.
At
and
the time of this recording, she's on the road.
She's on the road.
I imagine her taking on a C. Thomas Howell-like vibe and maybe meeting a Rucker Hauer along the way.
I was thinking more Soul Man, but...
Oh, man.
Soul Man Becca.
That's a good one, yeah. So so it's the three of us, and let's see, a lot of stuff to talk about. Right off the top, let us mention the social media stuff again.
Yep. Don't forget to write, review on iTunes.
Yes. And where are we on social media?
We're on Instagram, Twitter. We're on the Twitters. And
Shockwaves Pod on Twitter.
Yeah, the Facebooks. On Twitter, and then Shockwaves Podcast on Instagram. And then if you just look up Shockwaves Podcast on Facebook, we're there as well.
We'll be on MySpace soon. We're working up
MySpace. You'll find us on Tinder, Grindr.
But hey, Lloyd Kaufman claims that when he was on, he's like, thanks for that Grindr request. And it took, I had to Google it.
When he was on it. Never
and then
Google
I was
that.
Like, nothing surprises me about Lloyd Kaufman saying that.
Somebody,
all.
One of my filmmakers, one of our filmmakers texted me over the week, and it's a screen grab of a Grindr response. And it was, or an exchange, I should say. And it was someone's private messaging another person saying, hey, saw you at the bar. I really wanted to talk to you. Maybe you remember me. I was wearing blue shirt, blue jeans, and I have a white face. And the person responded back with a picture of Michael Myers peeking behind the bushes. And he goes, yeah, I see you.
That's
I was like, that's very funny. Very
oh my
funny.
God. That's pretty funny. Well, we have a lot of things to report on. There's movies, there's television, there's things that we've all seen. But
so much.
First and foremost, tremendous response to last week's episode with Synapse Films and having Don May Jr. on there. And you know what? It's great because Elric and I were talking right before we came on. It's always great when somebody from one of these companies comes on and we get to know them a little bit. And I feel like now people know Don and understand the lengths that they go to with their releases, and maybe we'll be a little more forgiving.
Clarify
in terms of
what
the
these
weight.
People do.
Exactly.
Between that and Twilight Time, where I think there's a lot of perception issues because everyone wants something now.
Sure. Yes. And now we know the reason why. And this is a good starting point because Don invited Elric and I on last Friday to pop over to the studio where they're color correcting Suspiria. So you and I got a sneak peek at what the Blu-ray is going to
look
like.
And we thought we were going to look at like one scene.
Oh, yeah.
We watched the whole opening, so we were like, oh, that would have been enough. I could have walked out straight away.
No,
we basically
just kept showing us
the whole
stuff.
Movie without sound, more or less. And man, did it look truly like amazing.
Yeah, I've never seen it like that. We, in fact, we kept noting on things we never noticed before.
Yeah.
You know, like the lights in the opening scene, the lights shining on the building, and it's from the headlights. And just the – it's a lot brighter than I remember, like the level of detail in this restoration.
And some colors are completely different in the when they showed us the uncorrected version and then showed what they'd done. You're just like, oh, my God.
Yeah, and that was what – you know, we're not just seeing it blindly. Yeah. They showed us a lot of what they had to work with to begin with and then the restored version. And we were just like – I mean, it's like when we're not just saying this, like we were legitimately blown away.
No, it was really exciting, and it's going to be an incredible release. And you know, we'll just all cross our fingers that we'll also see it on a screen some point because it's going to look so good.
Yeah. I think if they were to create a DCP of it, I hope they use this as the source because it was just terrific. The one thing I'll say, Ryan, and he posted it on, I think Don May posted it on his Instagram, the one and only spot that he's actually on.
Yeah.
On social media, but he showed us because basically what they do a scan of the original negative and then they clean that up. So even before there's color, whatever picture information is on the original negative, you could see it. So he showed us one scene. Well, he showed it to us corrected first, which was I forget the character's name, but it's one of the character. She's walking
the best
through,
friend character who's kind of investigating things.
Yeah, and she's walking through the hall, and then you just see these glowing yellow eyes in the background. And you're like, oh, that looks great. And he's like, all right, let me show you the scan. So with the scan, you totally see a dude all in black with like a ski mask on and like eye lenses on. Like you could just see him standing there.
And
we were like, you know what? That's kind of scary too, actually.
Yeah, really. It kind of was, especially because he still attacks her. It's kind of unnerving.
He's just like standing there in the background, like this dude in like a black suit. Yeah.
And we're I'm just all like, for them leaving that in. Yeah, that at least should be an extra feature.
We said, you know, you should leave that as an Easter egg, like somewhere where somebody finds you. It was like, because now we're in giallo territory. Like that's what that looked like.
Do a little filter shift where it just keeps swiping left.
Yeah,
that would be cool. That's great.
But yeah, you guys are in for quite a treat with that one. And I think they still said they're aiming for later this year.
He seemed very committed to it. Like, you know, it sounded to
me like they were in the
couple
final.
They were pretty close. Yeah, I think right now they're just waiting on the final sign off from Tivoli.
And then also
sound. And then a sound mix. Yeah. And then they were good to go. So, and you know, they're usually pretty good about like once they finish these things, they announce it and it's out within the month or whatever. So, look out for that. Let's see. Let's go movie-wise because we have all seen
let's do the
Alien Covenant.
Alien Covenant.
And I know everybody's been wanting to talk about this. So who
I've never seen. I've never seen such a – well, I have. I'm lying because it feels like every event horror film like this is divisive no matter what.
I know, but there's not much middle ground.
Correct. But there isn't a lot of middle ground these days, and I think in a lot of movies that come out. But – yeah, we all saw it. I saw it opening night with a packed house and a very rowdy packed house. A lot of cheers and a lot of cringes and a lot of there was a little bit of applause at the end. So the Glendale Mall folks really liked it. All right. Well, where to begin? We can dive in with a little bit of a synopsis because the film picks up 10 years after Prometheus.
Yeah.
You've got a crew of the Covenant, a ship that is going to go and they're basically a colony of what the crew is woken up. There's like probably 10 people that got woken up, but the entire ship is filled with frozen colonists,
like 2,000
people. And they're going to go colonize a planet that they have already done all of their research on. They have scanned. They know exactly where the fuck they're going to plant their little home and live. And they know everything, but they get a message from another planet and they're going to go investigate, and due to a unforeseen circumstance, their ship is a little disabled. So they're like, well, maybe we should go to this planet and check it out.
Crudup's impulsive.
Yeah.
The Crudup is just like, hey, this is good enough.
This is good. It's habitable. Well, we can go check it out.
A lot of them are in fear to go back and, understandably, to go back in cryospace because one of them dies horribly because of it. And it's kind of like, I'm not really too anxious to jump back.
It's a throwaway character. No big actor in that role, so it was fine. No big deal.
So they go to this planet, and then next thing you know, they all split up. They're fucking stomping around on things that they shouldn't be stomping around on. And sure enough, someone gets infected, and then you've got aliens a-popping. And there's some familiar characters who pop up throughout this story. And yeah, guys. I mean, like, I don't want to go too far into spoilers, but
that's good on
that's
the
a
story,
good tee
but
up. Yeah.
Yeah, the story. You know what? As soon as it was over, Like there were moments that I liked a lot, yeah. You know, like because the problem with this is like everybody was like going nuts like with the trailers. I never had that reaction at all.
What do you
because,
mean?
Like everyone's like, oh my God, look at how great, like Ridley's finally giving us the movie that Prometheus should have been. Yeah. And you know what? I like Prometheus. I mean, yeah, it has its logic issues. And the first time I saw it, I had a little bit of trouble with it, but that's the case of any known property. Anytime you watch a sequel or a remake or whatever it is, you have this expectation. So the first viewing is always very skewed. Yeah. But then when I watched it on home video, I was kind of like, you know, this is a totally fine science fiction movie. Mm-hmm. So when I go into the new – when I saw the trailers for the new Alien Covenant, like everyone's like, oh my God, this is going to be so amazing. And I'm like, really? Because – I see nothing new in these trailers, like at all. Like no. I wasn't excited. So I went in with a very low bar and it wouldn't take much to exceed that bar. Mm. And at the end of it, there's a few new moments and things here, but basically I turned to the friend that I was with and I was like, it's fine.
Yeah.
It's just fine.
I think I text you.
But it's unnecessary.
Yeah.
Like they're like, it's fine that it exists. But here's my argument.
Yeah.
Alien is one of the greatest films of all time, science fiction, horror, otherwise. Aliens is one of the greatest sequels of all time. Mm-hmm. You can't do better than those two. Right. No matter what you try, nothing will compare to those two movies. It's the same thing with freaking Terminator.
Right.
Terminator 1 and 2, stop.
But I don't think that's what we're looking for. I mean, I agree with you. It's funny because we just talked about how there's no middle ground, and I think all three of us are probably falling somewhere in the middle ground because I definitely didn't hate it. You know, I see why someone would hate this movie. I definitely didn't hate it, but I also can't really see how somebody would love this movie. And the reason I can't see that is because the character work is abysmal, like truly, truly ridiculously, and not David, obviously, and not certain characters.
Yeah, but, I mean, Fassbender was amazing.
Yeah, Fassbender
plays two roles, so you guys know.
But and this isn't about the actors, so this is definitely not putting, because they're all good actors. They just are given nothing, no character background. And the one thing that was teased by Ridley Scott's son, that teaser they made that isn't in the movie is the exact scene that the movie is missing to make me care.
Yeah, in fact,
like, I don't know who they are at the start of this movie.
Two scenes that they released online, which I watched after the movie, and one is the introduction of the crew.
Who they all are.
And then there's another one with that acts as like a in-betweener between Prometheus and this, which is just with David and Shaw, what's your name's character? Naomi Rapace. There is no reason that those two scenes shouldn't be like in the opening of this movie.
Especially the one that gets to know them, because you don't know who these people are. And the biggest cardinal sin is when certain people die, and we're dealing with these are all meant to be married couples, which they hardly go into in this version. You don't care because you don't know who their partners are.
I didn't know that two of those guys were gay until I watched that pre-show.
I didn't know at all until somebody told me.
If you watch the scene that introduces them, two of those guys were a couple.
I have no idea.
This is the actor from Tarantino's film, Mexican actor.
Damien Bashir?
Yes, he's a gay character, and you would never know from watching the movie.
Oh my God, I had no idea.
Somebody had to turn and tell me.
All right, well, this is one of my grievances, one of many grievances that I had with Alien, is that, you know, the film is falling into flaws that align with movies that try to imitate Alien. When I watched, and this isn't an Alien ripoff, it's more of an Aliens ripoff. When I watched Paul Anderson's Resident Evil, there's a moment in which Alice is walking down a dark corridor and all these soldiers compiling into the room, and you know, they corner her, they're questioning her, but you've got all of this cannon fodder. You've got all these people, and not once do you ever get to meet them one-on-one until the zombie starts eating somebody. You go, wait a minute, who the fuck was that guy behind the guy? And Alien Covenant fell right in line with this.
Oh, yeah.
There were a number of characters that I saw, and I was like, I have no idea who that person is. This person didn't. Yeah, exactly. And I actually thought one character had gotten killed, but then she showed up 5 minutes later, and I was like, hold on a second, which was also a problem with the coverage and the direction it really brought to the table. Now, mind you, every Ridley Scott film is going to look beautiful. Every movie is going to look beautiful. I don't want to hear, oh, but the movie looks great. It's going to look great.
Yeah, yeah.
We know that.
This is a gothic movie, which is kind of cool on that, like everything shot, especially once they get to where they're going.
I felt like Prometheus was a little bit more gothic. I think
Prometheus looked better than this film.
No, it did.
But this one looks more like The Dark Manor or something.
Sure.
Somebody was comparing it to Dante's Inferno. Dante's Inferno,
I think a little bit of Mary Shelley's Frankenstein comes into play.
God complex stuff.
And that stuff is really fascinating. The thing is, you know, these movies, these prequels are being looked at from a 30,000 foot view as opposed to a down on the ground, what kind of story do we need to tell? So with Prometheus, you've got a very sloppy story that sets up this kind of backdoor universe to Alien.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got the next chapter and you're left with the feeling of, what the fuck was that? Like, what was the point of that story? And the point of the story is it ties into another story that's going to come up like in 2 or 3 years. And
yeah, that's not the way to make movies.
Well, that's what I'm getting at.
I think Vice put out an article today, and you know, I don't always read their stuff on film, but this was dead on. It said, right now Hollywood is spending so much time world building, they're forgetting about delivering stories with characters.
Exactly.
Stories.
Yes. Yeah,
why do you want to be in that world?
The story of this movie is literally a bunch of people walk around and bad things happen. And the character stuff is so short. And the main, I won't say who it is just so you keep that in suspense, but there is obviously a Ripley type character. Unlike Ripley, who earns every beat.
I mean, they're letting her be, is what
I'm saying. But she doesn't earn anything she does. She doesn't show – I don't know what her skill set is based on. She just suddenly has skills. And there's just that kind of that kind of storytelling really bums me out, because they spend so much time with Fassbender's character giving you kind of some cool things. I feel like the actual crew and even who's writing Halloween.
Danny McBride.
Who does nothing wrong in this movie. Like, I feel like as an actor, he just showed up and did – totally solid work, but I feel like they could have still given him more
to do.
He's fun because he's Tennessee, but they don't give you that like special. Like even Harry Dean Stanton has special moments in Alien, and he's a side character. Every single person that cast,
you remember every character from Aliens,
totally.
Like no matter how long they're in the movie or not, I don't remember the name of anyone except Tennessee.
Yeah,
Amy Simons
is good too.
But I was going to say that is, you know, I mean, like you're holding that up. You're holding Alien up as a very distinct watermark in terms of how to build character and how to give distinctive characters. So, well, you know, when you go into one of these films, you're looking at that. You'll never be able to hit that peak. You'll never be able to, because if you do, if you're consciously trying to do that, you're just going to be called out for going, oh, that's the moment when Yaphet Kotto was like, where's our raise? You know?
Right.
They tried that. They can make better characters.
They can make better characters. Yeah. Absolutely. I completely agree. And then the other thing is, you know, purely the alien stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I thought, it was like all half baked.
It felt more like a monster movie than Alien.
It feels like it breaks the rules. And again, you're trying to judge it on its own merit, but it breaks the rules established by the franchise already. Mm-hmm. And that was really frustrating. Like the first major sequence, you know, and I want to talk about the positive as well, but I rather liked one guy gets infected by something and it basically comes out of his back. Yeah. And there's this whole like pandemonium that breaks out around this event. And like, you know, that sequence was a good, scary, cool adrenaline burst.
Yes.
You know?
Except it was diffused by the fact that two people, walked into a room and slipped in fucking blood.
Yeah.
You know, give me a fucking break.
And also, I guess, and this is something that does, I really think is a big deal, is like this reliance on CG created monsters, like the little ones, especially.
I don't care what anyone says. Ridley Scott did an interview. It's all CG.
Yeah.
There may have been somebody on set, but they covered him in CG.
Do you remember when that thing came out? I mean, and look, I understand your point that we can't hold it up to the bar the first, but they're also asking for that by making sequels to it, right?
Yeah, so absolutely.
But the thing, like the chest burster in the first one, is so organic looking and real, and the way it's covered in blood, the way it looks up at them and screams, there's something so amazing about that. I feel like, why would you even deviate from that creation?
Of course. Such
and in this one, they just, that's the worst. The bigger aliens in this movie didn't bother me as much, and they're interesting. They look more like a monster movie, actually more Lovecraftian than a alien movie. But I did think the little ones really bothered me because they were too developed or something.
Well,
and it just
had this been a sequel that takes place after the other four, maybe I would have bought it more. Mm-hmm. I think the problem is by saying this is before the ones you already know and love and breaking the rules. And the honest truth, I mean, most people, the things that I wish there were more on in this movie were the Prometheus threads.
Right.
Like, I actually kind of liked that, and I wanted to see more of that world and what they set up in the last movie. And instead, it's like, you know what? We're just going to rush straight to Alien. And I don't understand how you go from the Prometheus gods to kind of a clear-looking creature straight to Alien that we know and love from the movie. It just feels like kind of a rush. And it's like, why is that in the movie at all? Like, you know, I don't know. I feel like a lot of it is maybe a filmmaker that took to heart a lot of the criticisms of the last movie and tried to course correct. But in doing so, it's now a compromised version of his vision. Because people obviously have been writing all these these essays on it and literally taking quotes from interviews he gave immediately following Prometheus and showing how he deviated from what he planned this movie to be. Like, he explained what the sequel would be, and most of that's in this movie, and then there's stuff that completely is not at all, and instead it becomes just a generic alien movie. So I don't know. There's things about it that are cool, and I guess if you've never seen if you're new to the alien world or you love the Alien versus Predator movies, maybe this is for you.
No. I think that Alien Covenant, Prometheus are, you know, I think it's a little bit too intelligent for the Alien versus Predator crowd. I mean, those movies service, those movies just service, you know, the kind of creature feature bullshit, really sloppy, sloppy everything.
You know, there's a lot of thought being put into this.
That's
sometimes too much, it feels like. It feels like certain ideas are being teed up and then not
it's
delivered.
I disagree. It's not too much. It's the delivery. It's the delivery system, which is
By too much, I mean too many. Like if you tee up a bunch of really big ideas, but you only deliver on a couple and then leave a couple hanging, it bothers me. Because there's a lot of smart things
in there. They make it a point, and this frustrated me because it was a great character point that they didn't do anything with, but they make it a point to show that Billy Crudup's character is the only one that's based in faith. He's the only one that's religious in his faith.
So undercooked,
And there's nothing, there's no reason for that. And it was like,
that moment of challenging the faith.
There is a payoff, there's a weak payoff line that he issues, but it's not, you know, and there's something that happens to him, but it's not delivered right, you know?
Yeah.
I think, I mean, like Ridley's filled with ideas and, you know, I think a lot of people are kind of going, there's friction with what the fans want and what Ridley wants to tell, you know? And so, and I honestly don't know what the fans want either. Like I wanted to go in and I just want a good story.
Yeah.
And if the alien's there, great. Yeah. And you know, all of the Fassbender stuff I thought was really, really good. And then but then it just started like getting sidetracked by, we need alien. We need alien action. We need Catherine Waterston to fight it, you know? Yeah. And I was like, oh, stop, you know? But I like the Robinson Crusoe stuff. I like the Frankenstein
stuff. The opening
scene's
really interesting. The opening of the whole thing. It's about masters and servants and, you know, taking on your master. That stuff, that idea does come through, but I just feel like there's so many ideas. And it's funny, at the end of Prometheus, I remember being so excited about whatever the next movie would be, more than I was about watching Prometheus. I felt the same way at the end of this movie, go, well, I bet the next thing will be really good. So at least they're doing well with their hook endings, you know? Yeah. But, you know, look, it's definitely one I didn't regret. There's been a couple movies this year I saw in theaters like, I didn't need to see in the theater. I actually am glad I saw this in theaters.
Yeah, me too.
And I genuinely enjoyed it. I felt the first 30 or so minutes were incredibly boring. Like I was literally almost falling asleep at times because it was just banal character nothing. It wasn't character development, just character nothing. Like characters walking around. And then once they landed, it, you know, got engaged and got into it. But
We should try to do a bonus spoiler one at some point.
There's some things that are fun to talk about.
There's plenty of things I'd love to throw out there. But but we'll get back to that. That's our alien cover.
Maybe when the DVD and Blu-ray come out, we could assess all of the deleted footage.
Maybe watch it with Prometheus back to back because I haven't done that. I'd be curious to see how they connect.
Or maybe a commentary.
Dude, and this isn't really a spoiler because I know she's not in the cast, but Noomi Rapace, without telling anything about what happens to her, she's not in the cast list for this movie. So I'm curious, do we know if something happened behind the scenes for her involvement?
Well, like I said, she did the scene. They released it online.
Okay, I haven't seen that part.
The stuff that she came in to do, I guess maybe it was intended for the movie, and then they're like, no, let's just put it out online as a thing.
Okay. Interesting.
So she did come back.
Okay.
And do
I was
that
just curious
stuff.
If it was like if they had planned on making a movie about them or not.
Which they should have
pivoted. Yeah. because that was a good setup. Yeah.
Okay, so let's go to TV because there's another very highly anticipated.
Wait, Rob, it's not TV. It's an 18-part movie.
Oh, yes, there you go. Yes. Okay, that's actually very accurate.
And something that's dusting off the past and packaging it for a new generation.
25 years of one
which
and Howl's Alien.
Which seems
about to be
everything
we're
doing.
No, Alien's
Twin Peaks, baby. Twin Peaks on Showtime. And I watch – so what they did was they aired the first two episodes on Showtime, and you could immediately get the first two on their app as well as episodes 3 and 4. Yeah. And the way it is they showed the first two this week. Next week, they will air the next two, 3 and 4. And then from there, subsequent weeks will only be one episode leading up until, I guess, September or so when it'll culminate with, you know, their 18 episodes or 18 hours, however they're investigating it. I watched it with a group of people, Andrew Cash and Joe Madry and some friends, because I feel like, you know, I think a lot of people wanted to have their little Twin Peaks party. And I enjoyed it immensely. I enjoyed the experience of watching the first two back to back with a group of people because I was completely mesmerized, and it was pretty much what I expected, which was the unexpected. I didn't want it to just start out where all of a sudden here's all the characters you know and love, and here's that quirky thing. Mm. I wanted it to be so different and weird and make and put me off kilter that I'm not sure exactly what I'm watching. And boy, did it do that in spades.
Somehow I think you're speaking for the minority of the Twin Peaks nostalgia.
I know.
People.
Well, that's the irony. But that's the thing. It's like you run into that You know, Alien is a good example. It's like, what do you want it? What do you want it to be? You want it to be exactly like Alien, or do you want it to be more Prometheus? There's like fans don't know what they want.
Right.
And when it comes to David Lynch, I just want to be surprised. And that's the thing. And the irony is, we were talking right before we went on air, is like, we could talk all we want about the two to four episodes.
We can't spoil
and it
this.
Is not a spoiler because nobody knows exactly what's going on.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, that's the other thing is people are already, you know, it's been divisive already. And I don't think it's fair to dog on it until we see
have
how
they?
The 18.
Yeah. People
I've seen people like, oh my God, what is this? And it's like, well, it's 18 hours
what I've seen,
of a story.
Of a story that that's what he has been
from
very firm on.
From a mind like
that.
Him that's like, you can't like, you know.
Yeah, well, it's pure uncut Lynch, and I've seen a lot of feedback from other people that just don't vibe with the Lynchian tone. They're like, oh my God, so many scenes of nothing happening. I was like, well, yeah, that's David Lynch.
There's and a lot of people who would have liked the old show who wouldn't have necessarily liked his movies. And because, especially after the pilot, a lot of it's kind of watered down Lynch, and it's much more grounded in a real crime, and it's more like a procedure. But the one thing that crossed my mind as I was watching it, beyond the fact of being really, I was stoked that he gets to be uncut, but I won't lie. I've watched all his movies, read books on this guy. I really didn't know where the fuck we were going. Still don't know after four episodes where it's headed. Felt pretty, like the first two are kind of horrific, and so I'm really into that tone. Then the next two are goofy as hell. Yeah. I won't go into spoilers, but totally goofy and kind of lost me for a bit. But I said to the back of my brain, I don't care. I'm going with you on this ride.
Yes.
And after 18 episodes, then I'll tell you whether I liked it or not.
Yeah.
But I will say, I don't think he could have gone back, because what I hadn't factored in my brain, because I've been watching it concurrently, the old show, is too many people ripped off that show that you can't go back and do the show.
Oh, yeah.
Northern Exposure, Fargo the show, Fargo the movie, all these things have now taken the tone of what you did, which is quirky, small-town Americana. So, like, if you go back to that, you're now, what, doing a satire of what you're doing? So I get that he can't go back, but this is so sprawling. I wasn't expecting that. I think the biggest shock was that you're not even physically in Twin Peaks.
Oh, yeah.
that's
you're in
thing.
Many other cities.
It's very it's kind of weird that it's got scope, you know.
Yeah.
It takes you to Vegas, it takes you to New York City, it takes you to Twin Peaks,
Black Rock,
everywhere, you know. And I it's not about trying to figure out what the fuck is happening on, it's just how everything comes together. I feel like there's very clear delineated stories going on. I just don't know how they're all going to come together, you know. The Agent Cooper doppelganger Cooper stuff is pretty far out there, and I love it a lot. I just don't know where Twin Peaks comes into play in all of this. We just he's jumping in and reintroducing us to a lot of the older characters at Twin Peaks, but I feel like they're still trying to find their purpose. It's interesting.
I'm sure it's there. I mean, I'm sure it's going to tie in somehow. It's funny, like you said, some people are saying like, oh, it's just a bunch of scenes where nothing happens. That, to me, that's what Lynch stuff is. Like, you know, sometimes it's hard to process something like Mulholland Drive is probably one of my favorites, but like it was hard to process like the different characters and stuff. Now when I rewatch that movie, and if I only watch it in a half hour spurt, I'm like, I'm watching like five short films in a row.
It's so episodic because of it being intended for TV. That film without his amazing ending, like, which is I think one of the best 45 minutes of filmmaking, which was all a dream. Like, he had no ending. It was meant to be a TV show. You're totally right. It's so episodic that it would never work. It'd just be one fun, like the skit with the guy shooting all the people. It's hilarious. But on its own, you wouldn't know why it exists. And that's, I think, where we're at right now without seeing the whole yet.
Exactly.
And I'm hoping that as it leads, we'll start to see pieces falling chunk. I think Twin Peaks, the original, would be summed up if there's a story. It is who killed Laura Palmer. And I think the story on paper would be, where is Dale Cooper? But I'm going to say it is actually, who is Dale Cooper?
Who is Dale?
Right,
because,
right.
And that's way more existential. And I have, after four episodes, I'm like, whoa, I don't even know what's going on, you know?
I know.
But it's also exciting to be in the hands of someone who got total freedom, for good or bad. Like, we'll find out.
Yeah.
And it could be the last thing he ever does in it. And it really is a smorgasbord of all his movies, much more than it is Twin Peaks. There's a lot of Eraserhead, a lot of Inland Empire, a lot of Mulholland Drive.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh shit,
and a lot of new stuff where it's incredibly jarring. There's that one moment, and I'm not going to spoil it for you guys, but he does something to the image where things are going backwards and forwards, and it's super jarring, like just physically jarring, where I wanted to kind of turn away, you know?
And then there's a cameo in episode four that we're not going to say what it is, but said to Ryan, it kind of is more like Pee-wee's Playhouse now. So if that doesn't hook you, David Lynch's Pee-wee Playhouse.
Well, even the color palette, you know, even the color palette is very much Pee-wee's Playhouse.
But, you know, thumbs up.
Yeah, so far I'm into this
in terms
weird
of interest.
Listen, guys, I mean, I, you know, my girlfriend is really into it. She loved Twin Peaks. Twin Peaks came out when I was 14. I thought it was just, counterculture. My parents were like, my dad was like, oh, David Lynch is going to go off the deep end. And I was like, I'm going to love this. And I love season one. I fell in love with everybody. Season two, I bowed out and I lost my love for it. And then Fire Walk With Me, I wasn't a fan of. So it was very hard to get my excitement up. And I think I told you, I was like, guys, I'm not excited about Twin Peaks at all. But Sunday, Ciara was like, hey, I really want to watch Twin Peaks. I'm like, subscribe to Showtime. Let's settle in and watch this. And by episode one, I was all the way in. Yeah. I was like, I am a fan. I love this all over again.
I don't know if it's episode one or two, but there, I would say it's probably one of the best horror scenes of the year. Something really kind of just freaky and scary and like intense happens and like sexual, and you're like,
oh no, it is
shit.
One. Yeah, it is.
It's a great scene.
Really,
and so I think for horror fans, there's definitely
something
there.
There's good scares and weird stuff. And I was telling these guys beforehand, like I just watched Serial Mom, and it's just so weird to see Matthew Lillard all of a sudden as
so
a grown-ass
unusual,
man.
Yeah.
And
you
there's know? So many people, probably maybe too many celebrities and people popping up where you're like, oh my God, I don't know how this all will work. But we'll see by the end. It's cool. I'm glad. This will be fun. Like maybe every few episodes of our show, we'll check back in.
Yeah. Check back
go,
in.
What's
like,
going on
in
Twin Peaks Land?
Yeah.
I do think that Kyle MacLachlan looks good when he's in his doppelganger mode.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Badass, dude. You look badass.
I'm going to spoil it for everyone. I've actually worked it. I think it's actually a direct sequel to The Hidden. I think that character is literally Kyle from The Hidden.
Oh my God, that'd be amazing.
Which I did want to take to Twitter and just go, hey, for everybody who is watching Twin Peaks right now, you do yourself a favor and go check out The Hidden.
Oh, it's
because
such a cool
movie is amazing.
But if he feels a little more in that world right now than he does Dale Cooper, you're like, okay. But
I like that.
Yeah, good fun.
All righty. All right. So the only other TV thing I wanted to mention really quickly, and it's not really horror, but it's in my opinion, true horror. Netflix just debuted another original series called The Keepers.
I've heard it's really good.
This is basically, I guess, falls in true crime category, where if you love things like Serial or obviously Making a Murder, this is definitely up your alley. The very basic gist of it, I think it's 7 episodes. I just finished it last night. And basically in 1969, there was a nun named Sister Kathy Kesnick who taught at this high school, was very beloved by all the girls there, and disappeared. And her body was found a few weeks later out in the woods. And then similarly, another girl in town that, kind of same age range, looked like her, all that, also got kidnapped and murdered. So it starts with her still unsolved murder. And basically, there's two retired grandmothers who were seniors at the school at the time, and they loved her. Like everybody, she was very well loved. And so it's always haunted them, and they started a Facebook group to openly talk about this unsolved case. And that is the basic gist of what the show is about, is it's about the unsolved murder of this nun. But really, by episode two, they start to delve into the actual Catholic school that she taught in, and two of the priests that were there. And I'm telling you, I'm a horror guy, but I cannot handle real life horror and the atrocities that these priests did to
Don't tell me too much more because I'm in.
That's all I'm going to say is like
scary.
Episode two was so upsetting when you find out what was going on at this school and how maybe her wanting to stop it, put a stop to it, might have played into it. It is so freaking dark that I really had to space out the remaining 5 episodes. Like it was that intense. Like
you should wash it out with watching Sleepers. All the Kevin Bacon abuse you can handle.
Oh my God. But it's riveting. It's riveting. It's shocking. It's sad. It's infuriating, but it's just great documentary.
So it's 7 part
filmmaking. It's 7 episodes. It was by a guy named Ryan White who directed, I think it was on HBO, The Case Against 8.
Oh, okay.
I made that film as well.
Is this a self-contained 7, or do you think it does it leave it?
No, it's pretty self-contained.
Okay, good.
Obviously, like any,
crime story.
Because certain people are not with us anymore, but they paint as much of a picture as humanly possible, and really, it's I've said like the Ted Bundy to me is like pure evil of the serial killers. I think this one father is probably the most evil thing that I've ever seen in anything, fact or fiction.
Okay.
It's just horrific, and it really, really deeply affected me. But if you're if you're into that sort of thing and fascinated by true crime stories, this is one that you can't miss. It's called The Keepers. So check that one out.
I think it connects to Twin Peaks nicely. That's kind of what that was about.
Yeah. Ryan, there's one movie I know that we both watched.
Yes. We talked about it a couple weeks ago, said that we were going to check it out. This is Ernie Dickerson's Bones.
Bones!
Oh, not the TV show, but Bones, the horror film that unfortunately came out a little over a month after 9/11. And in the wake of 9/11, horror films did not have a very good time, simply because audiences didn't want to go see a horror film. Yeah. So this movie, I remember at the time I was a journalist, and it came out very quietly through New Line. And I remember seeing the billboards up, or some, not even billboards, more just like just posters like slathered on the side of a building. I don't think New Line really committed to really big ads for it. And I just remember going, what the hell is Jimmy Bones? And I started getting into press materials, went to a very quiet press screening for it. Like literally, it was me and probably three other people that were invited to the only test screening in town. And I was, at the time, greatly amused by the film, because this is supposed to be a vehicle for Snoop Dogg to basically play a horror villain, hopefully a franchisable horror villain. And it was a movie that I embraced. I bought the DVD at the time, and I had not actually seen it since then.
Yeah.
And Rob came in, brought me Bones on DVD, and I was like, that's a good Sunday morning movie. So I sat down and watched it, and I am still like, pro Bones. I think
pro bono.
Pro Bonzos. The film is surprisingly more complex than maybe it needs to be.
Yeah.
Because it's about it's a contemporary story, but it bounces back to the late 70s, in which we're introduced to Jimmy Bones, who is basically the godfather of this kind of inner city neighborhood. He monitors everything that's going on. He's a man of the people. He checks in on families. You know, he's giving bread to the old lady down the street. He's playing with the kids. But the second, some of his buddies and a corrupt cop try to bring drugs into the neighborhood, he's like, nah, man. No, crack is whack kind of thing.
Hold on one second right there. Like, the irony that this – what is he – because I watched a Josh Miller from Friday Night Frights, and I had to turn and was like, wait, so Snoop Dogg deals in lotto tickets, and now they're coming to him?
Yes.
Like, that's how he's like – that's how he makes it. Lotto tickets?
Yeah,
and then they come to him, and they're like, we want drugs in here. And Snoop Dogg,
yes,
the guy that smokes more pot, is like, nah, man, no drugs in my town.
I'm
like, what are we watching?
It's an anti-drug movie.
Rob, that's called acting.
I know.
It is solid. Pam Grier plays
Pam Grier plays his
girlfriend. Yeah. And you've got a lot of great character actors playing Jimmy Bones' friends. And then Jimmy Bones is double crossed, man. He's killed, unrightly so.
Yeah.
And cut to modern day story of these kids who purchase a building in this old neighborhood that Jimmy Bones used to run in. And it was his old building. And basically these kids just want to like throw a big party. They're like DJs or something. They run a business where they're going to throw these like raves.
Yeah.
And it turns out our protagonists are connected. Their father was connected to Jimmy Bones, and he was one of the guys that double crossed Jimmy. Yeah. Mm. So inevitably,
Nightmare on Bone Street.
Look, I don't know if you watched the special features, but literally, this was directed by Ernest Dickerson,
who can do no wrong.
He's Spike Lee's DP on things like Do the Right Thing.
Best Walking
Dead. Does a ton of Walking Dead. It was co-written by Adam Simon, who is the creator and showrunner of Salem. And he was on Killer POV 113.
One of the best episodes we ever did. By far,
And we talk a little bit about Bones in that episode because he did write it. But in the features, I can't remember if it was Adam or if it was Ernest, but basically they're like, Snoop Dogg walked in. He's like, they're like, what do you want to do? You want to do a movie? And he's like, I just want to be Freddy Krueger. So they're like, they made a horror movie where they make him Freddy Krueger. And there's so much Nightmare on Elm Street in this movie.
Oh, there is. Well, you can see it shoehorned in there.
His resurrection, the Wall of Souls, all the imagery is totally it.
Yeah.
But it's fun. And you know what else? I forgot Kathleen Isabel is the sister.
Catherine Isabel. Yeah.
You know, and she looks like she hasn't aged at all from then to now.
No.
One of the things I do appreciate, because I remember we were texting back and forth, and I do enjoy the 70s scenes a lot. I just did a double bill of Foxy Brown and coffee. And I, in modern day, Pam Grier has like dreads and stuff. Mm-hmm. But when they cut to the 70s version of Pam Grier, she looks exactly like she did in those
movies. She looks exactly the same.
They give her the fro and the same like outfit and stuff.
It looks like, dude, literally she looks like she time traveled.
Yeah.
Because she transforms in such a way because they put this kind of big sweater on her. Pam Grier in the contemporary story, she's basically like a mystic. She's like a palm reader, you know. And they cut back to her and she's got this afro. And you go, oh my God, you transformed. You like literally 25 to 30 years have been shed from you. And like Rob, the 70s stuff is the best stuff.
Okay.
It plays
pretty good.
Really, really well. Snoop is incredibly charismatic. Yeah. Everybody, you know, just seeing him kind of roll through town and deal with these guys who are trying to encroach on his territory, you're like, get him, Snoop. Get him.
I got to watch it because it actually really does. I avoided it when it came out because it just looked like something I didn't need to see.
Well, that's the problem.
But now I want to
see it. Yeah. And Ernie brings this kind of like blaxploitation aesthetic to it.
Yeah.
The blood looks a certain way.
Yeah, it was like very Hammer blood. Like
very
super bright red as opposed to that's like fun. What you would see from those types of movies.
Yeah. The downfall is...
I agree with you on this.
There's a third act that doesn't work because it's all those Freddy Krueger elements that come into play. You know, they kind of seed Bones' abilities, which are still murky to me, because there's this dog that oversees the property and the dog is not Bones, but more of a...
A
familiar hellhound thing, and the dog has its own abilities, and then Jimmy Bones' ghost is able to do things like Bianca Lawson, who's in the film, she starts to have these kind of very vivid dreams of her writhing in bed and blood is filling up the bed. It's very sexy.
Yeah, it's a great
sequence. And you know, the wall of souls and all this stuff kind of comes into play, and as a ghost, Bones is already a pretty formidable figure, and then he's resurrected, and he seems to be unstoppable and unbound to the house. But the mythology is super murky. Some bad prosthetics come into play.
Oh, boy.
and the CGI is a little not up to snuff.
Early days of CGI.
You had me.
No.
It's worth it.
Yeah, it's worth it.
It's just, the ending is not very satisfying.
No.
It's very like, huh?
Yeah.
Was it set up to be a franchise, you think?
At the time?
They were trying.
Did it end in that way? Like, it feels like they could keep this?
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. The only other thing I'll say is because then there's also a bit, I mean, it's kind of funny throughout, but there's a bit of a tonal shift for that third act. And the only thing I'll say is Talking Heads. Talking Heads, man.
I know.
That cracks me up. It's pretty good stuff.
Yeah.
All right. I'll lend it to you. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm curious. Yeah.
Yeah. What else did you guys see?
I saw a film called Lake Bowden, which is a superior slasher movie by The Hollywood Reporter. using my sponsor. I didn't actually know they were our sponsor today, so this is just random. It came up on Shudder just a couple days ago. I was looking for something to watch last night, and when I quickly Rotten Tomatoed it, it was just incredibly well-reviewed. It was all like 90-something percent. And I was like, what? A little Finnish slasher film? And this one's a really tough one to talk about without spoilers. It's basically impossible to probably hook you without spoilers. But it basically looks like kind of a big-budget American teen slasher film. It's shot beautifully. It's definitely the highlight of the film is the way it looks. It looks gorgeous. Until they started speaking, I just thought it was going to be a big American movie. And then suddenly the subtitles came up. I was like, oh, that guy looks like an American high school student. So it's two guys. It was a fun surprise. So the basic gist is there'd been some elaborate murders of a group of campers at this Lake Bottom. And these two guys want to take out these two girls to go out there to go camping and then try to kind of go through it beat by beat what happened to see if it would have been possible, how they would have sedated the people and stuff. And it's pretty light on that. Like you're watching the setup going, that's a pretty strange reason to go camping. Mm. So at that part of the story, I'm a little, you know, one foot out. It has some interesting, if you've watched 13 Reasons Why or any of these kind of teen panic kind of shows that are that's really popular right now, it has a little bit of that about something bad has happened to the main female in the past. You don't fully know what it is, but they're implementing it's about photos being taken of her that have kind of ruined her reputation, etc. So there's some interesting teen angles to it that I thought were pretty well done, and I definitely won't get into it does twist, so there's some big twists and turns. The setup is totally generic, and then you go, okay, it's this. To call it all the way meta, it's maybe a little more than I think the film really goes. I must say say I thought it was actually pretty fun and pretty cool. It's not, I don't think I'm the target. I think there are certain horror fans that this is exactly the kind of horror film they'll be excited to discover, because it hits a lot of familiar stuff, but it gives you a couple fresh turns. I feel like for me, it didn't, kind of same criticisms of Alien Covenant, where you set up a few different ideas, but the ones that I liked of your ideas, you didn't keep going with.
Yes.
You went with the ones that were easier.
Exactly.
Me, you know?
Yeah, no, I saw the film a little bit, I think late last year, and I completely agree with you. I thought it was really slickly done, a little bit of overuse of the drone establishing shots. It was guys, come on, we get it. You got a drone. But once it started getting into really interesting territory, the movie just ended. And I was like, that's not the third act I wanted to see as the whole thing.
Yeah, yeah. It takes you to kind of more, you know, mythology building towards the end, and then it ends. And so, but I definitely would give this one a thumbs up, as in, like, check it out, because, you know, go on Shudder. I love what that Shudder's doing, these kind of things.
Yeah,
like,
getting original stuff.
And it's helping me cut through the stuff I can't figure out what to watch with new movies. You know, like, if this movie had been on Netflix, I guarantee you I wouldn't have watched it, because of the poster, the title, the setup. I would have been like, oh yeah, it's just another same as everything else. But by Shudder doing an exclusive, you suddenly go, okay, I trust their taste, you know?
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's one, to me, I think, cool thing about what they're doing. And so I think I'd be curious to hear your thoughts. I don't think they'll be wildly different from ours, but I do think you'll like it.
Yeah, I'm going to try to check it out before next week.
Yeah. But anyway, it's always cool to see, any new slasher film. It's always fun to see what people are going to try to do with it.
Yeah. All right, Ryan, anything else for you?
Yeah, I purchased My Demon Lover from 1987 at Texas Frightmare. This was a film that, for some strange reason, my parents had me avoid like the plague, and I have never, ever seen it. Huh. And I saw it for $5 in a bin, so I was like, I'll pick that up on VHS.
What was it? Oh,
VHS. Yeah. It's not available on DVD or Blu-ray, I don't believe, and for good reason. This is a New Line release. And the poster, I'm going to read to you, because it's Scott Valentine on the poster. And it says, "She was a dream come true. He was a good reason not to go to sleep." Now, why would they mention sleep in something that has nothing to do with sleep or nightmares?
Yeah.
The film is basically about a woman who is having bad guy luck in a big city. And no matter who she winds up meeting, the guy's a weirdo or a dirtbag. And one day she meets this homeless street musician who basically plays
Go back to magician. I like that.
Musician who plays the saxophone on the subway, and it turns out he's a demon.
Oh,
and you know what happens? Every time he gets sexually aroused, guys, the tail comes out, and the demon inside starts to come to the forefront and kind of starts screwing up the sexual encounters they have.
Is it like comedy?
It is a pure, straight down the middle comedy.
Wow.
Not funny in the least. And not scary in the least, even though on the poster it also says falling in love can be very scary. You know, what can I say? There was a whole lot of build up. It was just interesting to see a lot of people who were on screen and behind the scenes on this one. Obviously, it was a Robert Shea movie. Lynn Shea's in it, playing a diner waitress. She's got a great moment. Jacques Haken, DP. Huge DP now. Yeah. I mean, he's huge. Shot Kong, shot Fast and Furious. He shot this as well. Huh. But listen, guys.
I guess that's hard to judge on VHS. At this
point, I bet
it's pretty hard to tell.
Listen, I mean, you know, the stuff that I toss on VHS, you know, it's stuff I'm going to wind up falling asleep to, and I wind up staying awake for this one. But it's not funny. It is Scott Valentine. This was when he was on Family Ties, and they were really grooming him as the guy, the Michael J. Fox, you know. And
was he Skippy? Was he the neighbor?
No, he was
Skippy. Like
he was the
boyfriend.
Rebellious boyfriend.
He was Justine Bateman's boyfriend.
Okay, that makes more sense. Skippy, I can't imagine getting his own movie.
I remember all the ads are like, she's dating Rambo. And they try to make him out, and he's always
show up like that. It was just funny, because I remember at the time, I think Cine Fantastique had done a big article on My Demon Lover.
Huh.
And this was the whole reason why I wanted to see it, because there was a lot of illustrations by Bernie Wrightson, concept art. Huh. And I was like, that demon's so cool. I need to see this. This sounds really fun and really edgy. And It was neither of those.
But what was your parents' problem with it? Did
I
see it?
I think it was
getting sexy around.
It was all sexy. Yeah, I think it was a little bit of the sexy time that scared him off. It's the whole reason why I wasn't able to see Howard the Duck. But yeah, Howard the Duck was a problematic movie.
Yes,
and this is today My Demon Lover would never hold water in today's society or get made. Correct. I mean, who's the actress? Michelle Little, who plays Denny, our main character, is just like, oh my God, essays and think pieces would be written about her character and how, you know, she was portrayed as a woman. It was just, but again, 87, what are you going to do?
I'm sure the sequel's better.
My Demon Baby.
Yeah.
Hilarious.
So anyways, for those out there who were like me and curious about My Demon Lover, stay away.
Yeah. Wow.
All right.
I have something controversial to say, guys.
Oh,
very controversial. Uh-oh. Our listeners are going to be excited about this. I want to talk very briefly about the Empire Pictures Blu-ray box set that just got released.
Should I be glad that I didn't drop 200 and
yes.
something? Yeah.
Yep, that is what I'm here to report, actually.
So
good old Charlie Band, Full Moon, and Empire Pictures, he put out a giant Blu-ray box set. It's about, I think it's like $250. Jeez. It's 18 titles, although technically 17 movies, because two of them are like Metal Storm, and then a different disc is Metal Storm 3D, and then it's 15 discs. So it's basically 18 titles, quote unquote, spread out over 15 discs. And it's, you know, it comes in a giant box set, which is kind of neat. But the deal is pretty much, I'd say almost all of these titles have already been put out by Scream Factory, which, you know, I don't know, maybe they'll comment on it or not. they've all been put out already. So the question is always like, are they the Scream Factory releases in the box, or are they newer versions that Charlie did? Are they all Blu-ray, even though it's a Blu-ray box set,
right,
et cetera? And, you know, Scream commented about how I guess he must have licensed the discs from them or bought a bunch of discs to make these sets, because they're also super limited. And, my buddy Josh Miller bought it, and because he didn't own a lot of these titles. I already did. I mean, it's got like Dolls and Metal Storm and Prison and just a ton of that stuff, Crawl Space. And so he brought it over, and the only two titles in there that I wanted to watch was either Arena, because I'd never seen that one, or Trancers, because I love Tim Thomerson.
I love that
one. Like,
that's a great film.
Yeah. So we pull out the Arena, which is in a Blu-ray box, by the way.
Uh-oh.
And then we open it.
Oh, no.
And it's
Scream
Factory DVD of Arena with the Eliminators, which is also on one of the other discs.
Are you fucking kidding me?
So then we pull out the other discs. Now, he's satisfied with his set because he never owned all the movies. So I guess if you don't own any of them at all, it might be a good way to get them all in one shot. Oh. However, me as a fan who already owned the majority of them was like, why would they throw an Arena DVD, let alone one that Scream Factory already put out, as one of the discs in this Blu-ray box set? Now, it's corrected on the website where next to that title it says in parentheses DVD. But I wouldn't have known that. I was like, it's in a DVD case, a Blu-ray case. So it looks like the actual discs are the Scream Factory discs, but it's not the same cases either.
Wow.
Like, even the cases seemed kind of a little on the cheap side. So I don't know. I was like, you know what? I'm sorry. I'm going to have to mention this to our fans, because if our listeners and stuff, because if you're thinking about dropping, it's $250, right, for 15 movies, 18 discs or whatever. That averages at about 16 or 17 per disc.
Yeah, it's still a lot. That's like paying full price.
So, I don't know. You do the math and you decide what you think is best for that. So, I say it's a pass on that. However,
we did do a good episode with Charlie. We don't need him again, I guess. Wow. I guess that train's sailing.
However, I will say that I enjoyed Trancers quite a lot. It's the first time I actually understood the movie. Because as a little kid, I didn't understand what the hell was going on. People were getting possessed, becoming demons. He's coming back from the future.
Helen Hunt's in one, right?
That one. She's in the second one as well.
Yeah.
And Tim Thomerson, bless him, like, he's so good that he will make any of that crap work. He's that good and committed an actor that I'll watch anything with Tim Thomerson.
Yeah.
You know? Huh. So at least we got to watch Transformers.
I think it's a lot of fun.
I'll say that.
I think we saw a 60 millimeter print. I don't know whose it was. It must have been Mike's,
must've
I guess.
Mike, yeah.
At Jump Cut, it was fun seeing that.
Yeah.
I think it was with Night of the Comet. It was a cool double feature.
Yeah.
Wow.
Ryan, anything else?
Elric, you got anything
else? No, that was it.
I want to mention this one movie I saw at Overlook that was a highlight of the Overlook Film Festival. It's called Two Pigeons. Directed by Dominic Bridges, co-written by Dominic Bridges. It stars Javier Botet, who is a creature performer. He was the kind of creepy, lanky thing in Wreck. He was also Mama.
Ah, yeah.
And he's played multiple other creepy crawly
things.
He's
the alien in Alien Covenant, apparently, before they CG'd over him.
Oh, okay. Oh. Cool. And this movie is basically a kind of Sleep Tight-esque scenario. It's set in England, and it's about a realtor who lives alone. He's kind of a slob, but when he dresses up to go to work, he's a total pimp. You know, he exudes basically wealth, and he exudes, you know, being a clean-cut guy. But, you know, he's the kind of guy that piles up all these dishes, and then a week later he'll go, I got to clean up and, you know, finally reset. And so by day, he goes to work, and the closet door opens, and we're left inside his apartment. And when he leaves for work, the closet door opens, and Javier Botet comes crawling out wearing nothing but tidy whities. Hmm. And he walks around this guy's apartment. He maybe like uses a tea bag that the guy used to make some tea. He'll use the same plate to make dinner, or I should say breakfast. He'll sit there and play guitar. He'll watch television. And then when he knows this guy is coming home, he'll leave everything right where it was. He'll leave the tea bag on the oven, and he'll turn the TV off, and he'll go back into the closet until the guy goes to sleep. And then Javier Botet comes walking back out, and he'll brush his teeth using the guy's same toothbrush. He'll do all these things. And basically, it's a cycle. And it's just about this guy who lives in the wall behind the closet of this guy's home.
It's like the Darren Bousman childhood real life story.
and you don't know why, but things escalate when the realtor's girlfriend, who you presume is like she lives out of town or something like that, and she's visiting her boyfriend, and things escalate from there, and Javier Botet's character starts to really, really manipulate and fuck with this guy's life.
Oh, cool.
And insert himself in ways that it creates a rift between boyfriend and girlfriend, and he is just – you get a sense that he is just out to ruin this guy's life for a very specific reason. And you find out. And I think that I kind of went in cold. I went to go check it out with Judson Scott from Atomic Monster, and we didn't know what to expect. We were just like, okay, Two Pigeons, it's a very random title for a horror film. And then Landon Zackheim, who is one of the programmers and founders of Overlook Film Festival, he's like, welcome to our gross out entry at Overlook. And I was like, I don't want to watch a human centipede movie again. This is very different. This is a little bit gross out, but it doesn't go to extremes like Human Centipede. And it goes into some uncomfortable places in which you want to kind of look away, but you're captivated by the performance of Javier Botet. And I'm blanking on the actor who plays the realtor, but you're just captivated by the dynamic and you're captivated by the cycle and what's going on. It's a little repetitive, but things do start to amplify and escalate in the second half. But it's a very, very interesting film, and I think everybody should check it out. And I've been remiss to mention it since Overlook. But
it's called Two Pigeons?
Two Pigeons, yeah.
It's hitting my single white female buttons because I'm a big fan of that. It sounds like you did the male version of
it's
that.
It's very, very interesting, and I think XYZ Films is selling it, and I don't know when it's coming out, but I will let you know.
That's cool.
Yeah.
All right, before we break, I just wanted to make mention, since this episode will air on Friday, May 26th, both Severn Films is having a warehouse clearance sale on 12 of their titles, and simultaneously, the gang at Vinegar Syndrome is also doing a halfway to Black Friday sale, where it says here on their site it's 50% off pretty much everything. Reason I'm bringing that up is because, Elric, hopefully next time I've put this off 2 weeks now. I want to talk Psycho Cop Returns.
I promise I'll watch it by then because I just watched
it. I threw it on and I started getting into it and I passed the fuck out because it was so tight. I
put it on the assignment for next week.
Well,
right?
we should all get together and just watch it.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
I did start there. I watched the whole thing of Malibu High, which is the one the guy like forced upon us. He was like, oh, if you take one, it has, and even though it's not horror and it's a pure exploitation high school, it's crazy. It's borderline porn, but in a kind of fun way.
All right. Well, if you guys want to take advantage, both Severin and Vinegar Syndrome have sales right now. And we'll
that's
take
all
a
our
break.
Competition. That's all
the
our
competition.
Guests.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just also I want to throw a plug really quick to a very special event that's happening here in LA, since a large number of our listeners are based in LA as well. There is a musical coming up called Slashed.
Slashed the musical.
It's not gonna. It's only for what? How many weeks? Couple weeks.
It's only through June.
Fringe Fest.
Yeah,
Fringe Fest. But anyways, you could find it on Facebook. Just look it up. Slash the musical and get all the details there. But I wanted to throw a little plug that way because I think they're doing something very interesting.
Yeah, Mars made wrote and directing.
Yep.
Yeah, it'll be fun. We'll report back on that once it starts in June. All right, we'll see you in a few.
Today's sponsor is Shudder, the premium streaming video service devoted to horror, thrillers, and suspense. Backed by AMC Networks, Shudder has a growing and dynamic selection of thrilling premieres, originals, and exclusives, and is the only place you can see Ken Russell's legendary The Devils. New this week is Shudder's latest exclusive, the meta slasher Lake Bodom. A hit at South by Southwest, Lake Bodom is inspired by the true story of four teenagers stabbed to death while camping. 40 years later, a group of teenagers arrive at the same campsite, hoping to solve the infamous murders by reconstructing it minute by minute. Declared a superior slasher movie by The Hollywood Reporter, Lake Bodom is a horror film you do not want to miss. See it today, only on Shudder. Shudder is available on the web, iOS, Android, Chromecast, Apple TV, and Roku for $4.99 a month or $49.99 with an annual membership. But Shockwave's listeners can get a free month by entering promo code SHOCK at checkout. Go to Shudder.com today and find the best selection of horror available to stream anywhere.
Nice. All right, I'm going to check that one out, man.
But we like physical media.
We like physical
too.
Physical media rules.
Streaming's fine and everything.
But when you want the physical stuff.
When you don't want to see the pinwheel of death during a film, which I do not get on Shudder, I am just saying.
Okay. Then you would probably go to these guys, the forefront, in my opinion, of the horror physical media Blu-ray market.
For the last
Criterion
5 years.
Of
our most popular guests.
Our most popular guests almost, ever. You know,
always,
they were actually
a hit.
They were on Killer POV several times, and they were technically our first guests ever for Shockwaves.
Mm-hmm.
Always strongly requested,
and also the team that is bringing us
Lawnmower
what I've
Man.
Always wanted the Lawnmower Man on Blu-ray.
Yes,
I do mean
I
this.
Like. I mean that too. I like that movie, man. Brett Leonard for the win. Welcome back to the show, Cliff McMillan and Jeff Nelson.
Hey guys.
Yes, this is it. And holy smoke, we're here because this is your 5-year anniversary.
It's crazy.
Happy birthday, guys.
Yeah,
thank you.
It's
thank
pretty
you.
Incredible. I mean, remembering you guys launching pretty much with Halloween 2 and 3, mm-hmm. and I think They Live.
Yep.
And now we're almost at what? Close to 300 titles.
We have announced about 300. We'll cross that mark this year.
Unbelievable.
And then we'll go on for another, you know.
Unbelievable.
Yeah,
294 as of today.
Right. Yeah. 294.
They have printed us a list of all of them, which is awesome.
Yeah.
It gives us some context here.
It's very surreal. I mean, Cliff and I are really proud. I know the company's really proud to have a 5-year mark. And, you know, when we started all those years ago when we announced 7 titles and they were big ones right out of the box. But, you know, I don't think either one of us would have predicted the steamrolling of titles and Good Fortune and classics and obscure movies and movies that we love that we're like, can't believe we're putting them out. It's just been very surreal. We've had so much great support. Can't do it without that support from fans, consumers, people like yourselves, you know, other people in the biz and talent and, you know, it's great. Very humbling.
Right. You know what? I'm curious, the now with a little bit of retrospect, what is the business like now compared to when you first launched? Because, you know, physical media, when you guys were launching Scream Factory 5 years ago, was still doing well enough, but of course everyone's like, oh, it's all going digital. And yet now you guys are amongst several specialty labels that specifically license horror titles. And I don't know what it is about the horror genre. I feel like horror fans in particular have this obsession. I know I'm speaking for myself for sure, to own this stuff. I need my library at home, mm-hmm. you know? So has, you know, what's different about the business from when you launched with those three titles to today? Are you doing even better? Are you putting out even more stuff? Have sales evened out, gotten better, less? You know, curious.
Oh, you want to take a stab at that first, Cliff? I'll be happy to join in.
I can't remember how many retailers were with us 5 years ago that aren't with us anymore. Oh. I don't, you know, losing Tower Records or Circuit City or having some retailers like Walmart or Target shrink the space because they make more money off selling toilet paper.
FYI, Best Buy, as of this week, I only just noticed it's not a horror section anymore. They used to always have a section, but now it's just A to Z. And that really bummed me out because it always helped me when I went into that store.
Yeah, so I mean, there are less retailers. I think that our fan base, especially horror people, like you said, they're rabid fans and they do want to have the physical media. I don't know too many horror fans that just say, oh, I stream everything.
Right.
I'm sure they're out there. I just don't know them. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, the fans know where to go. You know, you got Amazon or whatever to buy your titles or directly on our site. So I don't think the loss of retailers are affecting. I know it's sad, like my children don't know what it's like to go to a record store or go and rent a movie, you know, and it's just sad that whole, you know, period that we all loved so much, browsing, you know, you can go to Amoeba or whatever, but for most people that experience is gone. But I do find it funny how some people are starting rental stores now, and I know a guy who's helped me on some releases that opened a VHS store.
Nice.
And he's thriving, you know. He's paying the bills and keeping the lights on. So,
plus the irony is there's no competition anymore, so now I feel like the ideal time to do a specialty rental store or something.
It's like the increase in vinyl. Records, there are more record manufacturing warehouses that are starting up again because they need to meet the demand of people buying records.
Yeah. Have you noticed more of an increase in terms of sales via your website and things like Amazon because now those retailers are gone, or?
Yes. I mean, one of the great things about us is our e-commerce site has been really strong. We all, the collector's editions will often offer posters that you can only get through us, or last year with titles like Return of the Living Dead and Carrie and the Thing, we had deluxe offers where you get a specialty piece of art that was only at our store. So our own site has improved leaps and bounds. Our customer service has improved, our shipping has improved, the site experience has improved. That's good. And Amazon is good too, but I was going to point in, I think the biggest thing that's been different in the last 5 years is quite frankly the competition. I mean, mentioned it earlier that there are a lot of labels out there and they're all doing good stuff. I mean, listen, as a fan of this content myself, I pick up other studios, products. And
I see you post about it regularly.
Yes,
I
do. I'm bummed when we can't get it, but if another company puts it out and they put it out in a great fashion, I'm cherishing it. However, though, that being said, I think it's easy for us in the biz sometimes to be like, well, we can get these titles, we can trade, we can buy them, or, difference. But a collector only does have a certain amount of money in their wallet to be spending on a month. And so when a particular month has 15 or 20 titles across the board, there is this process of selection. Well, this is a day one title. This one goes on sale. This one maybe I'll get later on sale. That there and so it does take away from, say, our sales on some levels. It depends on the title. Something like The Thing, I didn't have to worry about
it. Do you have a specific title that came out in a saturated month, like where you could actually see it probably was hurt because of competition?
Because, Elric likes to push a title every episode
you're on.
So what
do you
need to
sell? I'm still pushing Slumber Party 2. Sorry, guys. I'm still wearing that cross.
We still need sales on that Slumber Party 2.
I'm pushing.
You know, God, I can't think of anything right off the top of my head. I'm looking at my list of 300 here. I mean, something like, okay, so here's a great example. Dreamscape came out in December, you know, but we also had Black Christmas that month, and we also had The House That Screamed, and other companies have a lot of fourth quarter stuff. So maybe that's a title that, like, gets a little lost in the shuffle a little bit. Yeah. Sometimes we do have films that happen to... being that Squirm was like that. They're just, you know, it's sometimes a little bit to do with timing. But, you know, then later on, there's a resurgence or sales. We will often look at sales numbers, say, 3 years from when they first came out, and we'll say, huh, this, you know, this title like Death Valley ended up doing this much numbers when it was really slow out of the gate.
Right.
So
Funhouse too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Started out slow.
Yeah. It's unpredictable. There are, you know, certain titles, obscure titles, that, you know, they just stall, and it's too bad. That's all that it's going to be. But, you know, but then we also have other titles that overperform, and that's sort of the nature of the business.
Helps balance it out.
Yeah.
How has fan outreach and your position in the public eye changed over the last 5 years? Because you guys had a table at Monsterpalooza this year, and you said it was very different for you guys. You did have a Shout Factory booth at Comic-Con in previous years, but this was purely Scream Factory.
Yeah, well, I definitely pushed to have that this year because I've been wanting to do it for several years because I think it's really important to be on the ground, grassroots, in front of our fans, face-to-face, and be able to talk to them. And Cliff and I were both there. We had a great time, had nothing but positive experience from Friday when we opened till Sunday when we left. We'd like to do it again. Hopefully we will be able to do it again this fall. Fans will ask sometimes if we will travel. That gets a little bit more complicated, you know, money, resources, overhead, a lot of stuff. But I know Cliff and I would, in a perfect world, love to do that. We'd love to be at Texas Frightmare. We'd love to be at Horror Hound conventions or Festival of Fear or Boston or any of these
places. You were getting swarmed at Monsterpalooza when I came by. I mean, it seemed to, but it seemed to be a good interaction, too. Yeah. It seemed like a nice back and forth you were getting with
the
people.
Well, the other thing, too, is we had other staff there that also knew about our titles, too. And when you're going to come up to our booth and you want to talk stuff, you don't want it just a suit. You don't want somebody who's just like, hi, please buy this movie. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
And I think it's important. I'd love to be able to do it more. I know I speak for Cliff when I say we were envious that other companies with less overhead than us, mind you, are able to do it a little bit more freely. And
sure. So on a list, top three companies you hate.
Oh my God.
Alex just going for
it. I suspect one of them was near us at Texas Frightmare, but I'm not going to name names. I'm just guessing. I'm not going to throw you under the bus live. I'll wait till we're off air.
This is
that.
Apparently the last episode of Scream
Frightmare. Got to push those buttons.
Well, you know what? Actually, I want to talk about several of the bigger titles that you guys came out with since the last time you were on. But I mean, look, by the time this airs, this will all probably be spoiled already from our East Coast people. I know there's some things you'd like to announce and talk about exclusively here for the first time, new titles, some plans for the future. Can we get a little sample of what that
will
be? Oh, man,
it's cutting right to it. It's like we're on a date and you're just like, baby, let's go.
Yeah. Don't like bury it. The lead.
This will be in the, this will be on the message boards before it even airs. So.
Well, that's actually true because the thing is, our product pages will be up probably before this airs and it will probably be already on Blu-ray.com. So,
we could release this a day early.
No.
Just throwing it out there.
We'll be fair. We're going to try to do it simultaneously.
All right.
No, we have.
And we don't know. Neither Ryan nor Craig don't know. We wanted to wait for this for our genuine reactions.
Okay. So we have four titles that are coming up in September. And they, when I was looking at the list, each of them come from one from the 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s.
Oh.
So starting in the 60s, we have this, what is this, Spanish or Italian? It's Quiet Place in the Country. We'll be coming out on Blu-ray. And that's, it's Frank...
Franco Nero.
And Vanessa Redgrave. Very bizarre... kind of film, but does have a cult following.
So and the Beckett title is from the 60s. Yep. Each one of us gets a title here, I'm thinking.
The one from the 70s is going to surprise some people because it is a TV movie that we are, yes, because we've had interesting history with TV movies. As you recall, we had a double feature back in the first year of TV Terrors, and it was Initiation of Sarah and the Kathleen Beller one. I'm even forgetting right now. He Knows You're Alone, something like that.
Are You in the House
Alone? Oh, I should look up my list. that's how many titles we have. It didn't do very well, and since then we've had a couple of TV movies that were like Body Bags, that's John Carpenter, or Psycho 4, that's a part of a franchise. But this one from the 70s was from our MGM deal, and we saw it there, and we were like, you know what? There are a lot of fans of The Spell, which was a Carrie ripoff.
Yes. From I think Becca's talked about this one.
Oh, yes. it's a hoot. Helen Hunt, Lee Grant. From the writer, Brian Taggart of V and Visiting Hours and other stuff. So that will be coming to Blu-ray as a new transfer, and so we're looking forward to that. That's personally love it.
Nice. Did that one come from like a personal place, or was that a fan? You've seen fans discuss that topic.
Both, okay, meaning, cool. Well, a little bit of like, we're sort more personal. See, Cliff's outing me right here. I think the movie is a hoot, and it is one of those like fun TV movies. It's such a Carrie ripoff, but it was a part of our MGM deal and sort of one of the, you know, as savvy fans know, we've kind of mined that catalog a lot. Yeah. So that was one of them there. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, cool.
I just want to take a break between these announcements to read for you the Quiet Place in the Country synopsis, because I think a lot of people do not know.
Yeah, I hadn't heard of this one. Yeah.
Okay, a popular painter plagued by nightmares that he and his lover / sale agent are engaging in bizarre, ritualistic, sadistic sexual acts, seeks to escape the city and rent a house in the country.
Nice.
Sold.
Yeah.
Sounds like Dark Song with Frank O'Neill.
Lover / sales agent.
Wow.
All right, commence.
So, going on into the 80s, we have a film that I actually personally have not seen, but I can't wait to, because it looks fun. It's called After Midnight.
And,
Yes. Let me see the poster. I'm pretty
sure it's an anthology film, right?
Yep.
And it's written by the Wheat Brothers, who did Silent Scream.
Pitch Black.
It's from 89.
So After Midnight. And then in the 90s, this is more Cliff's pick, but it's a one that we're pretty excited about. It's Dan O'Bannon's The Resurrected.
I'll be all over that. Yeah.
There we go. Big one.
And who put that? Was that? There was some sort of German of this, because I've seen the copy and it was so much fun.
Which I almost really bought, but now I'm canceling that order.
Of course. Don't buy German.
We can just acknowledge we'll be doing a new transfer of it. Cool. A lot of the bonus features that are on there will be imported over. And it's not a collector's edition, but we're treating it. The reason being is because it's sort of a relatively unknown film, but it's known in certain fashion, meaning you guys all had
cuts, I believe. It was known for like there being a bad cut, and then Dan O'Bannon, or I don't know if it's even bad. It might be better than Dan O'Bannon's cut. I just know that was the controversy over it, was there was a director's cut later, and then he passed away before he could. Yeah. It's a fun movie. It reminds me, I've always thought it would double or pair well with The Night Flyer. I felt like they had a similar tone and vibe to them as just kind of investigative reporter type vibe and very kind of almost 90s feel. Yeah. But the monsters in both movies are exceptional. The Resurrected monster is amazing.
Yeah. Cliff's a big fan of that one. So he has The Resurrected. I got The Spell. Cool.
And this will feature the multiple cuts or the director's cuts, or how does that work? I don't even know.
It'll be the same theatrical cut. I mean, the studio that made the film is sold to MGM, so the assets aren't there anymore.
Mm, okay.
But there will be deleted scenes and stuff that was cut out will be on the disc.
Yeah. We have a new key art on that one because we didn't have usable assets to create. In fact, The Spell has the same thing. We don't have assets to create key art, and we're sort of put in that position to do it. We did that with Cherry Falls, and oddly enough, we had to do it with the car. That's so
weird.
Yeah.
Huh. That masterpiece.
Somehow,
hey, we love the car.
Somehow we could not use the poster of that. We were sort of scratching our heads on that.
How did Cherry Falls sell?
Yeah.
I feel like we got to push that sucker.
Unfortunately, not as strong as we'd hoped. Yeah. I think that was what title that was, you know, a holy grail of, oh my God, we're going to be able to unearth these R-rated scenes and stuff that, you know, the studio snipped, but that wasn't the case.
It's all gone,
Yeah, and so...
Oh, that's that was the problem. I didn't realize
that. Nobody, they just threw it nobody out. Saved that stuff back then. They do now, of course.
Because there's a lot of weird incestual things going on, especially...
I love that movie. It's a fun one.
Yeah, no, rewatching it.
I think it's a very fun movie.
Your copy. When I first saw it, I remember it was hard to see. Saw it and was like underwhelmed because of the kind of movies that were coming out. Mm-hmm. Or so much like it. Watching it now, it's so much more subversive and weird.
Yeah.
By the director of Romper Stomper. You know, you're like, it's such a weird choice. I thought it was a really cool movie. I think
Brittany Murphy at
we'll
her
push
hottest.
That one.
That's, yeah, Cherry Falls, I mean, it, you know, it's one of those ones where I'm glad that we're talking about it because it's like lots of clamoring, lots of excitement. Yeah. We got it. And then, you know, I mean, it didn't flat out bomb or anything, but it also just kind of trickling along. So, you know, word of mouth certainly helps on those
titles. Are these films physically sitting somewhere? Like, I mean, I know certain copies of them are, but like, say, Cherry Falls, if you guys made a certain amount, do they just sit in a warehouse? Or, do, like, what happens? Where do they all live?
Does anyone in my living room. boxes.
We do have, you know, we have a warehouse that has inventories of stuff. Yeah. So a certain amount, you know, certain amount of titles are made once we see initial sales orders and to cover replenishment and, you know, and sometimes that replenishment, we have to replenish and sometimes you don't. And then there's sort of parked there for a while and then sales come in, word of mouth comes in, you know, over time.
Well, thank you for dropping those four exclusive announcements on this. One for you guys proved to be the most challenging to get, or was it relatively because were they all under the MGM thing?
All of these were under the MGM umbrella.
Okay,
so there was
got it.
You know, I mean, we have, you know, I'll do my normal teasing of, you know, what we have to come down the year, but, you know, we have a lot of logs in the fire right now. Some people say, you know, we've seen it online. Well, what else can they put out?
I liked it the other day. I saw somebody say, well, they're almost out of titles.
Right.
It's like, how do you know?
Yeah.
But it's wrong.
That's a good point. So we have, I mean, to Cliff's credit in particular, we just have a lot of things that are simmering on the stove. And whether they come to boil and we can, you know, celebrate and everything is one thing, but we have a lot of things going on. Even today, there was an email that Cliff sent to me that had a really juicy title, like, God, if we get that for next year, damn, you know. I mean, I will be having more announcements at Comic-Con like I do every year.
Right.
And there'll be some stronger titles and surprises. And
we will talk immediately after so you get the word out.
And you'll call me up and I'll give you my two cents. But
where do you push into new directions? And I mean, because you obviously have established certain studio relationships that are great and I'm sure keep coming through. But like, how do you push into do you keep pursuing the relationships that haven't necessarily come about yet? Because I can't remember. I know Warner Brothers was always tough, but like in general, are there some of those that's where you keep trying and you just don't give up on those relationships?
Yeah.
In other words, where's let's scare Jessica to death? let's cut the bullshit, all right? Let's just cut the shit and give me an answer. No,
well, luckily I don't get discouraged when people tell me no. So, you just got to keep going back. But you also have to branch out. Like, I think we were talking about this before we went on air, but like the Paul Naschy collection.
Yeah.
I mean, that was, you know, trying to find other content from other licensors that would be, you know, different and to expose, you know, younger fans to other films and especially films from other countries. And I had released the Paul Naschy films when I worked for BCI. So, I went after that.
Yeah, which one?
I'm going to, you know, kiss up here, Cliff. But to your credit, as far as persistence is concerned, Willard and Ben this month was a great example of Cliff has been trying to get those titles ever since you were at BCI.
2007, I think.
Okay, so talk about somebody who didn't give up, you know what I mean? And we have these titles that are first time on Blu-ray and DVD, much to a lot of fan excitement. I mean, that's a level of dedication of just being like, okay, you said no now, but perhaps a door opens. And, you know, going back in our 300 plus, you know, or 300, almost 300 library, we look at a lot of titles that were like, impossible on paper, like the Halloween collection,
yeah,
and Nightbreed, and The Exorcist, the director's cut, and things that, you know, we continued. And so to answer clearly on the sort of the other studios, I think other people know what those studios are. Of course we knock under the door. Yeah. Of course we try to forge relationships and try to work, because also for them too, you know, they understand that the business, the physical business for them is not what it used to be, and they have bigger fish to fry as far as streaming and blockbuster films and stuff like that too. So
are they seeing your, because you guys are now like officially, I don't know if you're aware of this, you are a successful model now. 5 years means you are legit. And I think as a title in America, you guys to me are the criterion of this genre. Mm-hmm. And we all accept that, I think. So having that reputation help with the studios, or is it also make it more combative in the sense of them seeing, oh, that works, we could do that ourselves? Like, what is that relationship?
I've seen two examples of doing that.
And you know,
we all know what that
but
is.
But in general, has it helped?
We know what it is.
They can trust what you will do with their films, obviously.
It definitely helps. Yeah. And as you were saying earlier about, you know, competition, that makes it harder because now you're not the only one knocking on the door and everybody else is knocking on the door. But
well, listen, I just want the Willard remake on Blu-ray, special edition. Package it with Willard, Ben, and you got the Rat box set.
Oh, and
I'm all about the Rat pack.
Add Deadly Eyes. But if we were going to go to Willard, we'd also have to get Of Unknown Origin.
Oh, yeah.
And make it a complete Rat pack.
George P. Cosmatos.
All in. I wanted to ask you guys about the Steelbooks that are coming out.
Oh, yeah.
What was the decision behind it? Because I'm all in. I'm going to get them anyway because I think the artwork is fantastic and I like steelbooks. It was just interesting to have a relative call me and he's like, so I already have the Fog, but I just bought the Fog steelbook. And I was like, Dad, Father's Day is coming up. Anyways, what was the decision behind that?
So steelbooks has been something that, well, first of all, Cliff is a big fan of steelbooks. And we've debated about doing these for years. We brought it up as a poll to our fans about a couple of years ago. And boy, was that pretty electric. It was down the middle. I love, I hate. And there seemed to be no common ground to it. And so when we saw it, it was a pretty volatile reaction. Mm-hmm. It was like, let's park this and, you know, just move on. Steelbooks are expensive, especially at lower quantities. Yeah. But they are cool and they are neat. And so this year when our 5 year came up, I was like, all right, you know what? Let's celebrate our 5 year in a little bit more of a grand fashion. Let's go back into our catalog at some of our older titles and our best-selling titles. John Carpenter just makes complete sense. And let's do something different and cool with this. So we went to a designer and we said, and it was a designer who did recently Carrie, which got a fantastic response because it was a different style of art than a lot of people associate our art with the floating heads and stuff like that. So we said, we want a line look. We want these to look very similar to each other. What can you do? And then on the side, we were working with Steelbook and trying to work out pricing. Well, that artwork came in very fantastic and really like it hit the mark. And so we put it out. Now, I'm going to say that I did a marketing faux pas. And I don't say that stuff lightly because I'm very...
Or on air.
But so one of the things that I did was about a week before we announced the Steelbooks, I teased it and I said that we have an announcement coming out, a special offer coming up. And I did that because I wanted people to be on alert that these were coming, these were limited, and that they would be the first to get them and pre-order them and buy them. Well, I should have just made this a surprise because... When you hear offer, people don't see offer. They think it's a new title. They think it is. They think it's a sale. Now, I had already gone on saying, oh, it's not a sale, so I was able to bring that down because I saw that going on the forums. So although there was a lot of excitement, there was this disappointment, which I felt bad for. We felt bad for, but it was from good intentions and not to do a hoodwink. We've seen other studios hype up some stuff and then, you know, we have great title announcements and the title comes out and you're like, ew, well, I don't know. I wouldn't hype that. That day was a little herky jerky. We were getting great sales, a great pre-order. So that was sort of balancing out some of the rather, we had to ban some people. We had some, we had the C word being thrown at it. It's amazing.
What? What are they angry about? That you're just putting out something that already exists?
That was a misdirect. They thought they were going to get something new.
I want to make sure that I'm clear on this. We are talking about a handful of people that attacked other people, called their names.
So attacking you. They're attacking.
They were attacking us too. I'm smiling when I say this, but the same token too, it's kind of like, guys, with everything going on in the world, let's bring it down to earth here.
Yeah, it's a movie.
Yeah. It's Steelbook packaging. You don't need to get it. You don't. No one's forcing. It was just coming up. But anyways,
it's
that was
a movie.
It is.
Remember my artwork article?
Yes. Oh boy, from Black Christmas. Sorry. It was a good article, and it was.
And I listed 100 charities to vote.
It brought up a lot of stuff, and you know, I get it. We understand it, and I had to say something on the Facebook page a couple of weeks ago about like we understand the passion, we understand, and you can criticize us, and criticize us all you want. That's fine, but you don't need to. You know,
attack
other fans or just like you fucking blah, blah. You don't need to do that. It's just not necessary. So anyways, that's the long answer to your Steelbooks,
baby.
But that's where it came up. So right now they're selling well. There's 10,000 limited each. Then that's it, you know.
Is there a big price difference between that?
We made sure that. So that was another thing, too. We were conscious. We didn't want to price them too high. But then if we priced them too low, look where business.
They cost more
money and we'd be priced out. So we hit the price that we were. The great thing is if you buy it on our site, you get a litho of the art. And we're talking like a rolled litho. And I'm sorry, if I was not getting one for free, I would be getting that fog one. No, I don't. I would be getting the fog.
After your faux pas?
Jesus. Yes, I know. Terrible. I do want to say, I want to segue something really quickly because I'm mentioning the e-commerce. Mm. I do want to let listeners know that next month, to celebrate further our five-year anniversary, we are having a very aggressive sale that's going to happen. It will be Scream Factory's biggest sale ever.
Whoa.
And so I hope I'm not doing the marketing faux pas here. But I stand behind this one because we will be doing it a lot different than we've done sales in the past. It'll be a limited amount of time, but it'll be a really good sale. So just, you know.
When again?
In
roughly?
June.
June.
Yep. Sometime in June.
Have you guys got the Steelbook fever now from this? Like, do you think it's something you'd continue, or just is it to have to be big, big titles?
Jury is still out.
Okay.
I think that the sales from this, because these are the bigger titles, if these did exceptionally well, if they sold to the 10,000 units each, then we could possibly consider some other titles that are strong.
It just strikes me it'd be kind of cool to have all the Carpenter ones. And,
yep.
Like, especially thinking about Steelbook. The Thing and stuff, it's like that would be pretty cool.
It would be, but again.
And our artist actually did a Thing cover. Yep. It was exclusive on the website.
Oh, yeah.
It's really nice.
Okay.
It would be cool to do some sort of a line look type of thing, but again, we're at the mercy of how they sell.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they come out in August and then seeing where we can place them and how Amazon and our site and all this stuff does.
Right,
and we'll sell us on my Comic-Con.
Well, speaking of directors, the thing that I love about Scream Factory is that you guys shine the spotlight on people like John Carpenter and then Toby Hooper and then Stuart Gordon, and you have so many titles from each of their filmographies. Obviously I own them all individually, but have you ever thought of doing director box sets like of all the titles that you guys own? Or has that become complicated? Because then again, I don't know what studio owns all them or how licensing works.
Well, I think you'd probably hear the same thing you hear from some fans when you announce Steelbooks, as they say, well, I already have two or three that's inside the box, so you know, why would I buy it? But no, I mean, we'd love to do it. And, you know, it is an idea to go to other studios and say, can I buy, you know, your disc on a spindle and put it in a... I know why you're smiling at my stuff.
I may have complained about that in the first half of our show.
But, yeah, it's kind of hard unless most of them haven't been out before.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Then you can really do it, you and know, and other, a nice job of
the
it.
Other thing, too, so, like, let's play a what if, like, a carpenter set. Like, a carpenter, like what we did for Herzog years ago.
Yeah.
Like
yeah,
a coffee table one, yeah, thing or whatever. Nice. That would be really cool. But, again, yeah. You'd have to get involvement from carpenter, obviously.
Yeah.
You'd have to have some new bonus to offset that. It would be, you know,
films.
Price point to pay for the packaging. There's lots of layers. I was just mentioning this today at work that, you know, we make these, you know, you hold these in your hand, we make it look easy. We really do, but there's a lot of steps that go mm-hmm. into it, from, you know, the costs and the packaging and the conversations with either talent or producers or the studios or finished goods or our company, you know, our president. I mean, there's just a lot of layers.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of labels that are smaller, so there's only a few guys that, you know, touch everything. Yeah. But at our company, there are tons of people that touch it.
Yeah.
And so when you have that overhead and, you know, we've got, what, 50-plus people at Jet Factory. So, I mean, all those things have to come into context when you're, you know, thinking about doing something. And, you know, does it affect – how many people at the company does it affect when I do?
Well – and that's a good point to mention, is that, you know, with our overhead, it's a little higher than, say, the smaller companies. So when you're having an obscure title that's coming down, you know, a Demented or The Naked Cage or
Windows,
you know, Windows or, you know, there's some, you know, some titles like that. So they'll perform at a level that for a company that has, say, maybe a couple of people in their roster, oh, it's a big win for us. But for us, that same number would be like, yeah, this isn't, you know, this isn't going to fly as much. So it's things that – those things we have to keep in
– Yeah.
Are you now apprehensive? I mean, it doesn't seem like it to me. Like, if I look at your slate, what impresses me so much is the diversity.
Mm-hmm.
Is this still – nailing these smaller movies that, like you just named four films, three of which we were like, oh, cool. For me, that's more exciting than movie, the
it
big
is for
blockbuster.
Me personally,
yeah, because we're discoverers. We want right. to discover a new movie. But has it at all slowed that down, knowing that you guys really do need to still balance it with the big releases to keep the lights on? How's the business model changing for you guys?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I saw somebody the other day saying, you know, if we're going to be on the show, are we going to announce a bunch of more double dips? But, I mean, those titles pay for the other titles.
Yeah.
You know, The Thing pays for a lot of smaller titles to come out. So
wait, no one's complaining about The Thing, are they really?
No. Well, no.
Well,
they better not be.
Some always complain in some fashion, but, you know. But
it's like, whoa, why didn't you release something that hasn't been out before? Like what? You know? It's we release a lot of things that haven't been out before. And, you know, so,
I mean,
well,
something, you said it perfectly. The Thing paid for, like, last year's The Boy Who Cried Werewolf, you know, or something like that. Or, I mean, it really, like they really, you know, we look at the numbers at the, you know, in a room full of people, we're scrutinizing what's working.
Yeah.
And no, those numbers for those two titles aren't there, but you look at The Thing and then it overpaid for the deal. So that's usually, so trying to get, say, a one-off title from one person that may sell a low amount of units, it ain't going to work for us, but it will work for another company that could do that, that has much lower overhead. Some of the stuff, you know, again, Demented, you know, Windows, stuff like that.
Quit picking on Demented.
Hey, I picked that one.
I don't know why I'm sticking up for it ever.
It's such a bad movie. It's fun. But, I mean, that's also a part of an MGM deal, which is a catalog deal. And we have a relationship, and we needed some content. And sometimes, so this is the other thing, too, and I said it earlier, sometimes those films surprise us. We'll get a title from there that'll overperform, which we didn't expect, and then it'll help out balance. It usually is the case.
But. What about the relationship with the new films? Because I remember Babadook doing great for you, which it should. I think, personally, I think The Autopsy of Jane Doe, for me as a person who sat in an audience, I felt that was the most gangbusters horror movie I'd seen in a long time. Just on a pure entertainment horror level, it was just great. And how's that one doing? Because that strikes me as one that should just fly off the shelf, but I feel like maybe people aren't all aware of it like they were with Babadook, whereas I think they should be. This is a movie they have to, our horror fans have to watch that movie.
Oh, it's doing well. Okay. Well, it's doing well. I mean, the first bite of an apple, Walmart, which is the biggest retailer and the place that you really want to get into, they have a new sort of exclusive sort of policy now where you're, if you play in their arena, you have to wait a certain amount of months in order for it to go either on our site or Amazon or Best Buy or any of that stuff. But the first week sales on that were pretty good, very healthy. Okay, okay. And we've already seen some strong pre-orders on Amazon. I would say next to the Babadook, it's probably our second, will be our second best. Like, there was the Hallow, which the was Hallow good. Really well. Backcountry did really well in the IFC line.
Great at Taxi.
Yeah,
one of the best.
Really.
The scariest thing I've ever seen.
There's a couple of them there, but Autopsy of Jane Doe has that momentum.
See, I just wasn't sure because that was a movie after seeing, I was like, oh, this has to do more theatrical, and then it really didn't. And it was kind of shocking to me because I was like, with a crowd, that movie kills.
Yeah.
It's just so entertaining.
It was scary. I loved it.
We have a lot of good IFC titles this year. The Devil's Candy.
I love that one.
A Dark Song.
Dark Song is one of my favorites so far this year.
Yeah,
Beyond the Gates.
Very buzzy. Mm-hmm. Beyond the Gates was very
it hits all the
buzzy.
Nostalgia buttons, which I think is cool, which also taps them really well with your kinds of titles because the 80s are, you know.
It was a perfect Scream Factory fit.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. We just acquired a new title that's coming out this fall called Jackals from Jared Revit, from Horror Trivia and stuff like that. Has a good cast. Our details will be spooling out a little bit more in the month, next month or so, but that's coming this fall. We're really excited about it. Very, The Strangers and You're Next, and Cliff and I both watched it, thought it was really good. Very much.
Cool.
Very Blumhouse-ish. a solid film. Very intense.
I was going to say, is that being branded like a Scream Factory original, like Fender Bender, or
no,
is that going to
just
is that
Scream,
a pure?
It'll be Scream Factory Films Presents, but it is not an original because it was already made and we acquired it and picked it up. So it'll be Bite or our Bloodsucking Bastards or some of the other ones too. But I would say it's definitely one of the stronger pickups that we've had.
And where are you guys at on your next original? Is that a road you're going to keep going down?
Yes, but it's a slow road.
Yeah,
so there was a lot of learnings from Fender Bender. We do have other people in our company that are working on scripts, working on casting, working on some stuff. And it takes a little time, as you guys know, working on films yourselves. And
I wanted to bring up the Paul Naschy box set again because, that's one of the other things I love about Scream Factory is some of the sets that you guys do. Like, obviously, Halloween was a big win, but then there's things like the Larry Fessenden collection, which is just, it's cool to have in your library. And, obviously I consider Nightbreed a box set because bought that fancy one.
And the Vincent Price ones.
Yeah, the Vincent Price ones are great because there's always at least one title that I don't know or have never seen.
Uh-huh.
What are the movies that are in the Paul Naschy one? Because I remember several years back DVDs of some of his films coming out. So is it those titles again? And why these particular ones? Because this will be my opportunity to discover Paul Naschy films.
Yeah.
You know?
Blue Eyes of the Broken Doll is the one I remember liking a lot of that.
Yeah, the five that are in the set were released by BCI, they aren't new masters. They are the same high-def masters that we had before. The reason they're not new is because the film elements are in Spain, and they weren't going to ship them to us. So, but we have done some new commentaries with some guys who run a podcast called Naschy Cast. They did a great job.
I told you guys we should have been there. We lost a job because of that title.
I think it's a nice mix of his films, and hopefully it'll do really well, and there will be more.
Mm-hmm. And, there's another thing. I don't know how separate this is from Scream Factory. Well, obviously there's the Shout Select series, which is kind of like more cult films and things like that. But since the last time you guys were here, there are I guess I should call them more obscure titles, some of them I have here, that are a lot more limited than your regular releases. You know what I mean? Like, what's the – there's ones that – I remember there were, like, four titles that you just released, I think, on the website.
Oh, so
– and I don't know how does that differentiate from Scream Factory?
Well, no, those releases, the ones you're talking about last year, which was Up from the Depths, Message in Space,
yes.
Velvet Vampire, and what was that last one? Time Walker.
Okay.
They're still Scream Factory branded. They're just – we're only sold on their site. We're still selling –
site exclusives.
Right. Deathstalker out of the five was the only one that sold out. So that's likely not an experiment we're going to do anytime soon. Only just because the – we stand to have more profit putting it out nationally than on our site on a smaller title like that. But it was an experiment. Hey, there's a five movies that are on Blu-ray that weren't on Blu-ray before. So, but that was sort of another lesson learned too.
All right. People are going to lose their shit over Slither.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say on our upcoming,
we talk about that one.
Upcoming summer stuff, Slither is definitely our tent pole for sure. And what is making it more tentpole is that James Gunn, I mean, come on, is so behind it. To have a director who's so hot right now not forget his roots is amazing. He tweeted about it. Yeah. We coordinated with him to make sure he was the first one to send out our art. Mm. And then we went out afterwards. That just doesn't... You don't see that all the time.
Yeah, I think he was very excited because he had wanted it to come out for a while on Blu-ray. Right. And he was very excited when we announced it.
Yeah.
That's cool.
And he did a new commentary for it?
Yeah. Our extras are still in progress, even when this airs, but we will be announcing them soon. But we've been very much on it, and he's been involved.
I assumed if James was involved in that, excited that there would be something new.
Most likely, but yes. But he, you know, he approved our art. I mean, all that stuff is just, I mean,
he's been great with his time.
I mean, considering that it's coming out like, you know, right after Guardians of Galaxy 2, and it's just in the mix of it, it's been, you know, and coordinated his
schedule. Yeah, we didn't plan that at all.
I was going to say, if Guardians of the Galaxy has already been in theaters for what now, 2-3 weeks?
3 weeks, yeah.
By July 25th, when Slither comes out, maybe it'll just be on VOD and DVD already.
I know.
Double cross feature. Promote. Just cross promote it. Wait, just cross promote
to
it.
To no one's surprise, there will
kids watch it.
Yeah. Right, exactly. To no one's surprise, there will be a big sticker on it that says, from the director of Guardians of the Galaxy.
You know, the slugs are in the first Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yes.
And in the collector's room.
And it's one of the best Rookers.
He put them in there as an Easter egg. As one of the many things that he collected.
I have to tell you that the artwork is so startling. I think it's one of our most outrageous pieces that there are actually a couple of women in our office that were like, this makes me feel uncomfortable. I'm like, good. That movie has an effect on the female.
I took a date to go see it, and she nearly walked out. She was like, this is too much.
Yeah, wow. It's very very body.
That in society would be the perfect dog. Yeah. Both
very slimy and stuff. Yeah. This summer we have, mentioned Paul Naschy, Slither, Lawnmower Man, you know, is coming out next month, and it's two discs, and, you know, Lawnmower Man is a movie that, well, let's be frank, you either like or you don't.
Oh, I love it.
Wrong, Jeff. Everybody loves this movie. Everybody knows that the director's cut is the purest cut.
And the director's cut is on there, right?
Oh, yeah.
Director's cut's on here.
Oh, cool.
One I'm very excited about, and not to get ahead of you, is Species.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Species is one of those little treasures of mine that I love.
Well, you guys did such a good job at the sequels, too. The sequel releases were great.
Yeah, and it's also one of my favorite favorite pieces of cover art that you guys have delivered.
Oh, well, Cliff, is a big fan of the series and franchise, and we sort of did it backwards. We had, you know, Species 2 and then 3 and 4.
We had asked for Species 1 several times, and they kept saying no because they were thinking of rebooting it and so forth, and so finally they gave in.
They were like, we saw how you treated Species 2, and that was with respect, so let's give Species a proper release.
Well, I'm really glad that you like key art, because
The key art on that is
from a group called the CRP Group, and they, our creative director kind of brought them to our attention last year with Dead Ringers and Rabbit, and had some different approaches. They did Serial Mom this year, and we like seeing the different, we're mixing up our art. You know, there's still, you know, great artists, Paul Shipper, Joel Robinson, Justin Osborne, you know, our stalwart, you know, the people that we did. But then it's okay to mix it up a little bit, diversify. Species is coming out in July. Teen Wolf, which...
my favorite movie of all time.
Oh, are you serious?
I love Teen Wolf. I have...
That is his favorite,
pretty
much.
Wow.
I may be on that disc somewhere.
Oh, you may be. Yeah. The person, Brian Ward, who is another producer at Shout Factory, who is helming that, loves this franchise, and it will really show in our final.
I'm the one that acquired them.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
Not dissing, but we got the right we got the right producer on it,
and
you know, and so. but you know what? That's the whole thing too. Is sometimes we'll get titles, and certain people will be like, "Hey, I'm the best person for this one," and then off you go. And Brian Ward is doing a fantastic job at it. So we'll be announcing those extras probably in June. There's a lot for that. And Teen Wolf 2, you know. People were surprised that we made Teen Wolf 2 a collector's edition. But Brian was really behind it. And plus, Paul Shipper did complimentary artwork for both 1 and 2 that look great right next to each other. So
yeah, they're cool.
Yeah, so we wanted to do that.
I just want to go back to Species for a second, just because I love it so much. But the new transfer is gorgeous. So anybody who was worried because the last disc didn't look so good, this thing looks amazing.
That's awesome.
Wow.
My personal fave coming this summer is the obscure one, which is called Windows. And this was a very, like, you know, under the radar, little known 1980s stalker movie.
It's in a lot of cult books, and that's the only way I'd heard of it.
It's a movie that never came out on DVD, with the exception of being on a movie on demand one, and never had a Blu-ray release, never had a legit VHS release. And it has, again, an interesting pedigree. Talia Shire's, and it's directed by Gordon Willis, who shot, you know, Godfather films. There's a lesbian stalker, controversial plot at the time that got lumped in with the movie Cruising, all this stuff, all the Ennio Morricone score. And so we saw it, and we went after it. We got great extras on it. Talia Shire, Elizabeth Ashley, the stars of the film, the producer, got some TV spots. We did a new scan. It's interesting. I showed it to a friend of mine this week who had never seen it before. He wanted to see it because I kept talking about it on my Facebook page, and he actually liked it. There are some things that don't work about it, but he said this reminded him of Dress to Kill, and it is sleazy, and it is uncomfortable. But it's also a time capsule of New York City that doesn't exist anymore. Yeah. And it looks and feels like the time, like those movies like Maniac and Cruising and The Fan and all those movies from that time period.
Every Abel Ferrara film.
yeah, very Miss 45. There's that kind of stuff. Except the thing that's interesting about it is that this is a high budget United Artists type of, like, this movie like went. And just kind of went to obscurity. So I like that we're able to still, like, unearth some things that maybe some people haven't seen.
Well, those are things that excite us the most.
You talk about weird stuff. I mean, the Manster is just
Cliff loves that.
I do, too. I grew up with the Manster, so very unusual.
The House That Screamed was a fun one that I'd never seen before.
That's a really well-made movie.
And I had a pretty lengthy report when I watched it with Joe Bashar and our reaction to the film, the pacing of it, by the way, and then the ending, which was like, whoa, all right, I get it.
Yeah, I had never seen the movie before in its entirety. That's the other thing, too, is sometimes we'll get some films come in and I'm like, I'm interested in seeing them. I'm like, oh, I liked it. And, you know, and it just, you know, there's a lot of stuff out there still, you know, ready to mine.
Which one's, I might have asked this before, but is it MGM that had Haunting of Julia, Full Circle?
No, they don't.
Who has that?
Sony.
Yeah, and so Sony's one of the harder companies to get through.
Well, they don't want extras because they don't want, you know, folks to have to approve them and look at them and make sure they're okay legally, you know.
Right.
So it's just wasn't appealing for us because that's what we do. So
right.
To release a movie with no extras, I mean, we'd hear about that on the internet. But yeah, you know, so it just didn't
there, but
make
there
any
are
sense.
Titles like that that I think the film themselves would kind of knock people over. Yeah, a lot of people I know right. don't know that movie.
Still not what we do. You
yeah,
know?
Yeah, that's, yeah, you know, it's what Code Red does, I guess, or something.
Or
like.
Mill Creek, you know, yeah. who Sony does license to.
Right.
They don't care about that, so.
Well, it's yeah. frustrating.
Let me just throw a title at you guys.
okay.
Time Cop.
Time Cop. Don't,
Van Damme?
We're putting out
the Van Damme
Bomb.
Movie?
It's Warner, which one? Warner Brothers.
It's Warner oh, Brothers. Is it Warner Brothers?
Yeah. Well, do you want to, just to get it out of the way, do you want to rattle the titles that everyone always asks for and say if they're still... if they're,
oh, God.
Just, I just covered no, it, Rob. I mean, it's called no. Time Cop.
So, no. so I will preface like this. I think Never Say Never is always a very right. good thing to say before these. And considering that we just talked about Persistence and Willard yeah. and you know, the impossible of some of these things coming out. But so sorry, we still don't have a path to Fright Night 2 or The Keep or, oh boy, Trick or Treat, Trick or Treat, you know,
right.
the,
oh, right,
the,
right.
the Gene Simmons
the
one.
The Gene yeah. Simmons one, Maximum Overdrive.
Oh,
Heartbreak.
God.
Thank you for Never Too Young to Die. Is, speaking of Gene Simmons.
Oh, pretty bizarre movie.
I love that yes. movie.
I know I asked before, but is Let's Scare Jessica to Death a Wright's one?
It's a Paramount one. Paramount. Okay. You do have to have a deal with Paramount right, in order to get that going.
I'd love to release it.
Yeah.
No, scared the crap out of
oh
me.
Oh, my God. And there's
such an atmospheric one.
Yeah. Lots of titles at Paramount we would love to get. Mm. I mean, just,
so do they have a relationship with any other company like you guys
the,
or not?
Not for the titles that everyone want. Is asking for. Yeah. The
and is
silver
it just
bullets
too small for them?
Yeah.
Like, not you guys, but it's the market, too. Like, they can't even bother putting effort
well,
in
well, remember they licensed all their films to Warner Brothers for 3 years. And yeah, they got, you know, $30, $40 million, something like that. So, you know, we don't have that much cash in our pocket, but
the other thing
we
you
did,
have,
we would we'd go after them.
The other thing you have to also have to remember, because you just mentioned this with Sony, is that every studio has this different infrastructure. Some studios are more staffed in other departments than other when it comes to legal, you know, reviewing artwork, looking at extras. Sometimes we indemnify the extras. There's all these sort of layers. There's also, as you can imagine, at studios. Just like anything, personalities involved, political protocol, how things, you know, there's all these fascinating layers of what makes studios tick like that. And so when we're coming in and saying, hey, we're going to help make your year, yeah. you know, it might not just be as cut and dry as that to them because of a lot of reasons, you know.
Right. Yeah, that's the kind of stuff that I think is always important to clear up, because we really don't know. We're at home looking for saying, hey, why the hell isn't that on? What's right. wrong with people? That's such a great movie. There's yes. a lot. I mean, The Tenant by Polanski, it's still one of those movies. You're like, how does that not exist on home release in America? You
know? Well, but yeah. we do know that some movies that aren't necessarily Scream Factory stuff, like yeah. Little Darlings or Looking for Mr. Goodbar, for Skate Town USA, music.
Music.
You know, the music right. sunk those things. Yeah. We even looked at, you know, moment by moment at some point at Universal, to Bad Lily Tomlin and John Travolta, Endless Love. Music. Yeah. I mean, music sinks those sometimes. You know, people weren't thinking about. There's this movie over at Fox called, it's a lion attack movie.
Savage Harvest
that people have asked us for. And because there's a very lengthy scene where everyone's singing All You Need Is Love, never going to come out.
God damn director.
Yes. It was just like, I mean, there are all these little loopholes.
Yeah, we announced that TV show Werewolf like 2009.
That breaks my heart.
And, you know, people are still wigging out about that. But it was all down to the Beatles and who was the other guy who I will never listen to again because he wouldn't allow us to clear a song.
Yeah, it's tough. Whatever. I mean, on even like, you know, we put out TV shows at Shout Factory, and like even the Facts of Life, we had to can a certain song just because it was like, nope, can't do that. But we let people know. It was one song out of an entire 9-season type of deal, but like that's where some things get cost.
Well, with Werewolf, I think you mentioned last time, it's because you can't get the audio elements separately.
Yeah, the only track that exists is the mixed audio. There's no mixed or, you know, separate track. So there was no way to replace it. The only thing we would have been able to do was actually cut the scene out of the show.
Does that change over years? Music, like, can those two songs that you couldn't clear in Werewolf in a few years all of a sudden?
No. Well, I mean, one was a Beatles song. So, I mean, there's just no way. Yeah.
Well, they're still stuff's on Apple now.
Now there are some technologies now that we didn't have even in 2009 where you can, in some way, strip music from a film, but
it's not what you want to do.
Would want to, yeah, you want to preserve it as much as possible.
Yeah, we don't like doing that. Yeah.
I have one title I have to throw out for two specific reasons, which is Carrie, the original Carrie. Because one, because I know how much that title means to you, Jeff.
Yes.
And I'm glad that you finally got to do it.
Yeah.
It really and I is. Thought the final release was terrific.
Well, you know what? Cliff did a great job. It was an expensive project to do in order to do that 4K scan from 4K the negative.
4K scan from the original negative.
Yeah, it looked great.
Cliff couldn't elaborate, but it was a damaged. It was a lot of things.
No, it was in pieces. It wasn't even in one piece. So we had to spend time editing the bits and pieces of the negative together first before we could even scan it.
Oh, wow.
And, yeah. It's the movie's got, all sorts of focus, touches to it. And, we spent a lot of time on that movie to get it.
Well, I had the original Blu-ray, and I remember the original one being very soft.
And it is a soft movie
like lots of De Palma films. But, we really played – not played with, but we really worked with colors and so forth at the end, like in the gym, and I think it looks so much better than the previous transfer.
Yeah. I'll be picking that up in the June aggressive sale.
it was another dream come true title for me. I couldn't believe my luck that the three horror films that basically formed my love for horror, Halloween, The Fog, and Carrie. It's the three, and I got to put them out, and I got to market them. I will say that I know you weren't able to go. We had that Carrie event last year at the Ace Theater that was pretty big, but I got to tell you, that thing, that caused me a lot. It was great. Listen, we raised a lot of money for charity. Nancy Allen was a doll, and her team were great.
Yeah.
And to be able to give love back to a movie that I personally love was great. But it was one of the more stressful things I've worked on ever in my career. I'd never done sort of an event like that before at such a magnitude. But there were moments in that event that made me just completely cemented with Carrie forever. And
the video you posted of you guys having a red light pop up during the scene at the end.
Washing the theater red.
That's so cool.
An idea that I had literally the night before, and I thought maybe the Ace Theater has the ability to do that because they have a lot of rock shows and things there. And so I went in like 4 hours before, this thing, and said, "Is this possible?" And they let me, like, literally be the person to flash the light up right when she turned. And I know that movie by heart.
Yeah.
That the timing was, and here you could feel everybody just goosebump and scream.
I'm glad to know it was you that pulled the switch.
Yeah. William Castle.
So
yes.
I had several people that
he
that was you.
He could have pulled the string.
Yes, I know. Sure. Yeah. We had only had fire and blood and everything, but no, just kidding. It was a great release.
I'd be remiss if I didn't say this, but on the way here, I was listening to our friend Mick Garris has his podcast, Postmortem, and he just did a really great interview with Brian Fuller, who's also a friend of the show.
Oh, great moderator for us.
And so, of course, Mick asked Brian about Carrie, his version that he wrote. And, he's been very candid about the lessons he learned from that, which was adhering a little too much to the novel, which paved the way for Hannibal. But basically, he said, what's haunted me since the day Carrie has come out is that we should just cut out all the scenes of the modern part because Angela Bettis and Patricia Clarkson are so good in it.
Yeah.
And basically Mick's like, do you want to do like an alternate cut of Carrie? He's like, yes, because I think there's a good movie in there and all it would take is somebody to ask.
Oh, boy.
So just throwing that out there Brian Fuller would love to recut Carrie.
Still a good movie. I enjoyed it a lot.
We love Blu-ray. Brian Fuller did such a great job moderating on that event, and I've talked to him a few times afterwards. I gave him a copy of Black Christmas personally.
Oh, nice.
And he's great. I wish that we had seen a sales bump in our Carrie double feature, but we really didn't. So, as much as that would be interesting, you know.
It would, but then we have to get legal involved, and
yeah,
you know,
so. It's one of those things. Who, that's the other thing too, is, you know,
would be fun to do.
Hey, listen, he said he's willing. That's all. I just want to put that out in the world.
I'm sure a fan will do that.
For yeah, exactly. There we go.
You achieved your dreams. One of your dreams. These three titles. Mm-hmm. What are some of the ones that are still floating out there for you guys, just personally? Whether they're big or small films that might never happen, but that you've just, not for the fans, not for big sellers, but just things that for you, you would personally love to see or be able to be part of putting
out.
Well,
Willard was one of your big ones.
Just because it had never been available. I mean, that was the main reason why. I mean, it's a good film. I mean, Ben isn't, but did I say that out loud?
I mean, I imagine like things like Romero. There's certain Romero. I'm a big Martin.
I mean, I'd love to do Dawn of the Dead. You know, and we've tried, and
we really did try on that one. So.
But is that a never say never? Still,
it's a never say never.
I'm sorry. Looking at some. No, it's not done.
It was like the optimist and the pessimist.
It's not dead.
Well, what are some others like those for you? I mean, especially because you've had the three of your favorite movies.
Yeah, I mean, even outside of Scream Factory, I'm putting out one of my favorite guilty pleasures, The Lonely Lady, which is just a bad Pia Zadora 80s film, whatever.
Yes.
I've been spoiled rotten. I'll be honest. The Sentinel, I've had some really titles that have struck a chord with me. Even dumb movies like Hell Hole. I'm like, oh, we're putting out Hell Hole. For me, the last ones that would just get me pumped would be Alligator. Alligator. I mean, it's still requested. I think.
Where's that one? Warner Brothers, right?
That one is, we either believe Lionsgate or Independent or something, but we don't have a handle on that one.
I think when we spoke to the team at Lionsgate, they said they lost it.
Yeah.
That was one of the ones.
Alligator would be amazing. Yeah. My love for Cruising will never end.
Yeah, but, I'm with you on Cruising. I think that would be a great one.
But it's there. There's some other stuff in there that I just can't, you know, we would love to get out. Hell Night or, you know, some other stuff like that. But
love to do a Friday the 13th box.
That would be good. Epic. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. The Fan Prophecy, the 1979 version. I would love that. Oh, there's stuff over at Warner Brothers. Deadly Friend would be great.
The 76 version of King Kong.
I love that one.
There's obscure movies like Scream for Help, which is showing like Michael Winner. Batshit crazy stepfather.
Tom Holland wrote it.
It's ridiculous. Yeah. It's out there. There's those
Manitou.
Oh my God! Wait, hold on.
Girdler box set. You heard it here first. Girdler box set.
The Studio Canal titles. Things like The Seduction, Vice Squad. Mm-hmm. I mean, those would be fantastic.
That'd be one of my top picks too.
Yeah. So,
you need him recreate all the Wing Houser.
Yeah, I could do all the Wing. He
looks just like
Wings. Are still around.
I would love Reform Schoolgirls. Yeah. They put out enough prison movie, so you know that would be a good one. But
Chained Heat
would be great. But again, spoiled, and so you know, it's hard to, you know, sort of either complain or whatever like that. But in wish list stuff, there's still some more that I'd like to see exploited out. And you know what? Again, sometimes other companies get in before. Scorpion just put out Silent Scream. That's a favorite of mine recently.
Oh, yeah. I saw your post about that.
You know, Kino put out some stuff that was like, if you're putting out Joan Collins is the bitch, great. I'll buy it. You know, I'm like, there'd be, you know, sometimes you never know what's going to pop up and, you know.
Well, you know, I was actually going to ask because the good thing about having healthy competition, I'll call it, is that we do get things like Silent Scream that we're looking for. What are some of the other companies that are putting out stuff that excites you guys just as fans? Because obviously you buy this stuff too.
I would say all of them for me. Honestly, I really can't single one out. And you know what? Here, I'll give them some plugs. I know it's our show, but we're good sports. You know, Vinegar does a great job. Severin does a great job. Code Red does a great job. Synapse, Scorpion, you know, all the
And I mean, you do buy them all. I see your posts.
You know what? I am just like a fan. I pick and choose. I don't buy them all. If a certain title speaks to me, I'm going to buy it. If I already said Kino had the bitch. You know, they have the Apple next month. I'm getting that. You know, I mean, I look at Blu-ray.com and other forums like other people do, and I see the announcements, and then I, you know, make a note, and Warner Archive will put something there, and I'll make a note, and we'll go and get it.
Does the future look bright for this physical media? Like, I mean, I know it's hard to project 5 years from where we are today, but looking
considering the trend, 5 years,
looking at competition, looking at the lack of, you know, certain stores, but then the healthy upswing in buying online. How do you guys project forward for the next few years, if you're guessing?
I don't think physical media is going to go anywhere. Just, you know, the studios want it to go away because then they don't have any fixed costs. They don't have to make discs. It's much easier to, you know, send something through the digital airwaves. But there is always going to be a fan that wants to own it, see it, put it on their shelf. They want the quality because if you watch a Blu-ray versus something on Netflix, there's a huge difference.
Major difference.
And so I think it's not going anywhere, and I think, you know, sales will probably go down over the years as people, you know, I worked for Tower Records for 9 years, and it was funny to watch the classical music business go away, and it was because everybody was dying. And, you know, young people weren't getting into classical music, so I don't think this is going anywhere because there's not that audience that's going to go away. There will always be movie fans or movie lovers.
People like us are breeding, having kids who are worth and showing them these movies.
Exactly.
Keeping the dream alive.
Exactly. I have one daughter who loves horror movies and the other one doesn't want anything to do with it. So, you are. You're bringing a whole new audience to it. And so I really don't think it's going anywhere.
Good.
Well, I want to spin off that question that you asked, Elric, is for Scream Factory as a brand, as a company, 5 years' time, where would you guys like to steer it? Any new avenues, whether it's more originals?
So, you know, in order to stay as a viable brand, you do have to evolve. And that is why we are, we experiment and we're doing, you know, looking into original programming, looking into original productions, acquiring new films, looking at, you know, a lot of our switch is also going into video on demand and what is going to register and make money there. You know, it is a business at the end of the day. We all have lots of, you know, we have fun and we put on our fan hat every day, but it is still a business. You know, as far as physical, I agree with Cliff. We want tangible. We want something. We don't want to have to rely on Netflix isn't showing this movie. Amazon Prime dropped this one.
I mean, right. Netflix original program, I think, is a really cool thing.
Yes.
And I see a lot of great stuff.
Yes.
But their selection is getting to be terrible.
And no, something has to go.
Yes,
when
exactly.
They do this.
Yeah, they realize the original program.
And the thing is that, you know, there are some movies that are getting, you know, completely lost forever in the shuffle.
Totally.
And there are movies, I hate to say it, that not our company or any of other companies out there doing what we're doing are going to be a get a hold of them because of, you know, difficult licensor holders or people that have a lot of, you know, Willard was one of those things where it was like, who owns it? You had to kind of.
Yeah, it wasn't even owned by a movie company.
Yeah,
so,
I mean, there's just things that are going to fall, unfortunately, through the cracks. But I think there's still enough out there to mine for physical. It's just a matter of, as I said earlier, the stuff that we have on the stove, will they catch? Mm. And if they don't catch for us, will they catch for somebody else? And, you know, but
It's just ridiculous. Like if you all of a sudden one night say, I want to watch Chinatown. You go on Netflix, it's not there. You go on Amazon, it's not there. Then you're on eBay buying a copy, which you're going to get 3 weeks from now because it's being shipped media mail. So, I mean, it's really sad that that's what it's come down to. It's great for eBay people because they're making money. You know?
I have a great sense of pride in my physical collection.
So
and of course, it's I'll hear from Ryan. He's like, yo, you got this? And it's like, yep, I do. Bones DVD will be delivered tomorrow. You know, I don't know. I know there's people like me. So
there is a. I love being able to go up into my, you know, office area and see all my Blu-rays and go, what am I in the mood for? Savage Streets, okay, you know, but Savage Streets isn't on El Rey Network being broadcast. It's not on Shudder. It's not on the like you know. I mean, it's there. And if I'm in the mood of watching that, I can pull it out and watch it. So I think, you know, that's sort of the another positive of why somebody wants to have physicals. Like, you can't take this away from me.
I'm just going to have a quick second to raise my glass to Danny Steinman.
Yeah.
Director of Savage Streets, who has passed away.
And Friday.
I know, it's a couple years ago, but I didn't drink for him then.
I was going to be like, wait a second, Elric. Did the news just break?
Savage Streets, I'm a big fan, and it's that shower movie for me. I watch it, and then I go, oh, I'm dirty. I'm a bad person. I'm terrible.
I thought it was something you watched in the shower.
No, well, yeah, I would do that too.
I'd laugh all the way through that movie. I just think it's so ridiculous.
Poor Linnea Quigley. Yes, well, poor girl.
But, yeah, I think there'd just always be, you know. I mean, as far as future physical is concerned, so, you know, last time we talked, there was the UHD or whatever. That's not really taking off for catalog titles. Some of those bigger studios are doing it for the superhero movies. And
it's very expensive to do.
Yeah.
Very expensive.
It's not – that's not a emerging
– I don't know if they service the films that you guys are putting out. You know? I mean, like the superhero movies, yeah, that makes sense because there's a hyper-realism to them. But, you know – do we want to see The Vagrant in UHD?
4K
I'm good.
TV.
I'm good with what you guys are going to put out.
Lawnmower Man, maybe we do.
listen, I would say in some transfers that we have, I mean, you know, look, you already see beads of sweat on people's foreheads that you probably didn't see in the theater, and you're like, oh, okay, well, that's really, okay, you know. We're not seeing another physical format emerging, but that's not to say that there won't be one, you know. But, you know, I think I've said this before. I think a lot of why we have a lot of passion for what's coming out on Blu-ray is, you know, on some levels, people think this is the last stop.
Yeah.
Could be the last stop on that front.
How Elric and I feel.
Yeah,
it's probably the last format that I'll embrace. You know, that's the thing. It's like 4K is, to me, I consider kind of a myth because it's like, specifically these, like Alienator, how much better is Alienator going to look than this Blu-ray?
Exactly.
I don't need a 4K version of this
because
it's going to look fantastic on my setup. And I just don't know. I mean, you know, of course, I'm into the 3D thing, but I'm going to have trouble getting 3D TVs in a couple of years.
Yeah, I know. I have the same thing, too.
Well, you're going to have a hard time getting the media, too, because even the studios have stopped it here.
Yeah.
I mean, if you want, you know, Resident Evil, the final chapter in 3D, you have to buy the UK or the German disc.
Yeah. Yep. And he will buy both.
I did start doing that. Well, you know what's funny? It's like I've found I just got a multi-regional player because that's the way I roll. And 3D titles are like half, if not a fourth of the price in the UK.
Yeah,
and they're all region. So I've been mostly buying those versions. What, I need more for, you know.
Well, I think that's why they're all region is because they know you're going to do that and they just don't want to do it here. It's another SKU that sits on in the warehouse and they just, you know, it's sad. But
feed my 3D-dom.
I'm the same way. I'm a big 3D guy.
All right. Well, it was pretty amazing. You got a great slate coming up.
It's been a great journey.
Four titles.
Yeah.
And congrats on 5 years. I have just five more, obviously. Just keep putting stuff out.
There's some great stuff coming this year. So all those people that think we're running out of titles are
Comic-Con's always big.
Comic-Con is, you know, I'll have my usual announcements that, you know, we'll have some good stuff there. And but, you know, every year when it comes down to it's like, Jesus, how are we going to be able to top? One of the things that I did say in the beginning of the year, though, and I'm glad that I did, was I wanted to set expectations a little bit for this year, that last year we just had some of the biggest titles ever. Carrie, Child's Play, Exorcist 3, Return of the Living Dead. Mm. Like, I mean, there was no, it's hard to keep that like momentum up. So in the very beginning of the year, I laid out the sort of like, hey, you're going to see my diverse, but you may not see. And I'm glad that I did that. But we've had some good success. Tales from the Hood was really big for us.
And that deserves it.
We were really happy about that release.
Serial Mom was really good for us. You know, RoboCop 2 and 3 ended up doing pretty good for us. You know, but we still, you know, to our roots, a title like Dead Time Stories is very much like what we're about. It's it's retro. It's 80s. It's silly. It's, you know, it's
Cliff and I had a good time on that one. Dead Time Stories doing the features. So.
And the director was great on that. Yeah. It was a fun release.
It's a cool little gem. Yeah. I like those little gems that it's like, oh, I missed this one, but here it is now and it looks fantastic.
I am very motivated personally by those. I often tell, you know, I don't, you know, tell my employers this, but I'll say it on there or whatever. It's like, yes, of course I get a paycheck. I got to get a paycheck or whatever, but it is often titles that we have on the slate that keep me like at the company and keep me motivated and keep me like, well, I may be having a bad day, but Windows is coming out in a month or so, you know. So
that's just like our podcast and which guests we have. Right. Like knowing you guys are coming keeps us going. Sometimes not going to name names, but
let me see. I'm trying to think of. I know we're coming to a close. Yeah. It feels like, but you know, I'll say it again. We're really grateful that we've had, you know, the people that are listening to this podcast right now. Thank you. I mean, we just never thought that was, you know, something there. We are humble in our, Cliff and I are, you know, we don't make a whole lot of appearances. We don't do a whole lot of this kind of stuff because we're quite frankly busy. And we also know that, you know, we are not the stars, or the movies are.
Yeah, it's the movies.
Yeah, right. It's the movies. And, but that being said, we're glad to represent. We, both of us, I'm sure your listeners and you guys know, between the two of us, we have a lot of diverse fan likes ourselves, and we come from different backgrounds. But I think that helps with covering the bases for a large swath of fans out there. I'm glad that Cliff and I are similar in some stuff, but we're different, and that difference is really a good thing for everybody.
Well, I mean, you know, we love when you guys are on. The listeners always love when you guys come on. So we really appreciate that. And you know, we love that you get to share this sort of stuff with our audience and vice versa. We'll probably do last Comic-Con, you announced titles, and I just shot you an email being like, hey, you want to jump on the phone and talk about them?
Yes.
And that actually answered a lot of questions. So yes. I imagine we'll try to do something like that again this year.
We'll be doing more, like I said, I mentioned the sale in June, just in closing. You know, we'll be looking at other ways to continue to celebrate this year, 5 years.
More merch.
Well, that's a tricky thing. We did open up a Zazzle.com store
car.
Site that
my one keychain on my new car.
Oh, really?
The Scream Factory.
Oh, nice.
Right. Yeah. On the
more of this stuff
on the Zazzle.com page, you can get like custom made T-shirts and hats and all sorts of things that we started doing that.
What do you got,
I've
Alec?
Got the homemade possession. Zulowski one.
He's just showing off.
You want to bring out is this a dick contest or what is this?
Freaking out the keychains.
I would just, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do a reverse. I'm going to ask you guys in the 5 years if you had to pick one title from the Scream Factory brand.
Oh my God.
That was like your wow, this is it. Can you pick just one? I think that's a fun thing.
We're gonna go.
I know you had a podcast where you said
but
your
Pearson
stuff.
But did it in terms of Carpenter, for me, it was also The Fog because it helped me reappraise. I liked it a lot, but then it went into the top of his pantheon for me, which shocked me, and it was just because of the beauty of the release. Yeah. It was just gorgeous.
Mine's easy. Nightbreed.
Okay.
Yeah.
That makes
Nightbreed,
a lot of sense.
You guys, that was like a myth and a legend that there was this cut out there, and you guys did the work.
Yeah. You really delivered a movie. It's like, wow, that's. Yeah.
We're still very. I think we.
I still have nightmares about it.
I was going to say, I still have a little PTSD from that release because it was, and we talked about it recently on our Facebook page. We've been doing this ongoing series of calling out films from the past, and either Cliff and I will chime in about, some inside stuff on it. And that's one where I would say, and I said it, that was a roller coaster. That was one that I was like, get me off the Nightbreed train.
It's a beautiful box.
But it paid off. Yeah, you know what off. I mean? It really paid off.
Well, I was a big fan. I mean, I talked about it on that one, but Why Did the Eye was saying I never thought I would ever see a proper version because I was somebody who found an illegal copy 10 years ago and it blew me away, especially the actual murder sequences. So that you guys put that out is so
Please
cool.
Please keep talking about that title.
Yeah, maybe
that's
the one
of those titles
yeah,
that needs,
right. that's
the needed
one.
The sales for sure.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. And I also really liked seeing Poltergeist 3 come out. And
I know,
you guys
we
did a great job
that.
With 2 and 3.
Thank
I thought
you.
They both were great.
Yeah,
a lot of fun. They're underrated in the fun factor, I think.
For me, my favorite discovery of your entire discography, believe it or not, is Body Bags because I'm a huge John Carpenter fan. I'd never seen it. I never saw it on Showtime. I never saw it on video or anything. And it was one of those things that I watched one October. I had the Blu-ray, and I was like, oh, I'm going to check this out. And it's there's very rarely new things that surprise us at this age because we've seen everything.
Yeah.
But it was like the perfect Halloween movie to me because it's like October, you're watching horror movies, it's an anthology, they're all good stories. I thought Carpenter directed the shit out of his two segments. And then you see like Sam Raimi, Wes Craven, and like all, you know, Robert Carradine, all these familiar faces pop up. And it's now since become one of my go-to October movies. Like, it's one of my Halloween movies. So that, to me, is, like, one of my favorite gems that I will watch every year around Halloween time.
Cool.
So that's the one I love.
It's a good movie. It's fine. I really love the gas station segment. It's great. If that had been expanded to a full movie, it would have, I could have watched it. It was really good Carpenter.
And All Hell, Your Halloween 3, because I think the documentary on that is brilliant. Yeah. The film is brilliant, and... You know, every Halloween that one comes out. So there's so much good stuff. It's an amazing catalog. 300 movies with that much variety. Mm. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Seriously. Great job.
Excellent. You. Thanks, guys, so much for joining us. And we really appreciate it. Happy fifth birthday.
We'll see you in 25 years.
Twin Peaks joke.
I'll be really old.